All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient.
Oh. All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Tuesday, that means two for Tuesday.
Here, man.
Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Hey, this weekend, very busy weekend. Every year, the first weekend in August is always really, really busy. You got Lollapalooza, which starts on Thursday. You've got the flashback horror convention, which we're going to be talking about for the next few nights, and that'll be coming up. That starts on Friday and goes through Sunday with an amazing lineup. And of course, the first Saturday in August is always National Mustard Day. Barry Levinson, who is the founder and curator of the National Mustard Museum in Middleton, Wisconsin, joins us every year to talk about the National Mustard Day and all the activities and all the fun stuff that's planned up there in Middleton. And so we will definitely have Barry on. He'll be on after the 1:30 news. So Barry Levinson is going to join us. Not the Barry Levinson who directed Rain Man, but the Barry Levinson who created the National Mustard Museum. He's got a really fun story. We talk to him every year. It's a blast up there. They have a great time. So we'll tell you all about National Mustard Day. That's coming up. Also, we've got some facts about mustard that we're going to get into, and some highly rated movies that people hated. You just assume that everybody loves these movies, but maybe not. And then what are things that are lucky to keep in your house? So lucky charms to keep in your home to keep the luck going. So and lots more here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk and text and your 2 for Tuesday requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And again, it is Tuesday. I was not feeling well yesterday, so I took the morning off. But I feel much better today than I did 24 hours ago. I can tell you, I can definitely tell you that. So I just needed a day off to recoup. But I'm back, and I want to thank Mark Carmen for filling in for me and getting the call at the last minute, and I appreciate him coming in and filling in. I am back, but I'm off Friday and Monday. So it's a short week for me this week because Friday I'm off because of the flashback horror convention. I got to get everything ready to go and spend the entire weekend there, and then I need a day to recoup. I normally take a full week off after the flashback convention, but I'm only going to take Monday off. So there you go. So that'll be 3 weeks now. It'll be over 2 weeks that we won't have my dad's joke on.
Yeah.
Oh man. Anyway.
he'll have to do a couple in a row.
Now I feel guilty for taking the morning off, and I, you know, my dad didn't get to tell a joke yesterday. So, all right. And then I'm off again this Monday, recouping from the craziness that will be flashback convention, which is always a really busy weekend. You know, and it's always a fun weekend, but it's also a very, very busy weekend. And I don't get tons of sleep when I go to flashback. I'm usually up pretty late and, you know, so anyway, I'm back. And thanks, everybody, for all the nice thoughts and everything. And I want to thank Carmen again for filling in for me. And here we go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom. Tom Hush, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Nick?
I'm better than I was yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how was your weekend?
It was good. Yeah. It was very good. I went and saw ELO.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What'd you think?
It was nuts.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. There were some songs that I legitimately haven't listened to in a very long time. Like, they whipped out, and their hits, you know, they played the hits, but, like, Last Train to London.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot how much of a jam that is.
Yeah.
And Donnie Harrison was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he went up and did some Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
And that was really sweet. That was a really nice moment for everybody. And no, it was a great show. The lasers were out.
Of course
it was
they
fun.
Were. Yeah. Yeah, ELO, man. If you were to look at my news feed on Saturday, it would be like 90% of my friends were at that show.
Really?
Oh yeah, no, there were people were taking pictures, all kinds of crazy stuff. So a lot of people were there. It was at the UC. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I haven't seen them in years, but I did see them on the legendary Out of the Blue tour in 1977. They played here at the Chicago Stadium, and it's still one of my favorite concerts that I've ever seen in my life. So, well, that's cool. Hey, in the newsroom, it's Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm better than I was last night.
I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Yeah. You had a pretty good weekend, too?
Yeah, it was all right. That was with my boys. They were just me and the boys, two boys, two teenagers. Jeannie was in Wisconsin, and their sister is on the East Coast. She's visiting New York, Cape Cod, and Boston with some family, so she's having the time of her life.
Oh, that's nice.
We just went to the movies.
What did you see?
Well, I wanted to see that new one with Brad Pitt but Leonardo DiCaprio,
yeah.
But I heard it was a little, Tom gave me the inside edition on it, told me it might be a little too much for the younger one, who's only in the eighth grade. So
yeah,
we saw Lion King, and we all three thought it was a little probably for a younger audience. That was kind of our takeaway from it, but
yeah.
It was all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, your youngest is how old?
13.
13.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I saw The Exorcist when I was 8, so I can't
right.
I can't make comments or advice. I can't give you advice because my father took me to see The Exorcist when I was 8.
Right.
So I was desensitized at that at that point. So I don't know, but I think a 13-year-old would have loved Once Upon a Time.
Really?
In Hollywood. I really do.
I think he would have too. But I do agree that it might have been a little. I didn't want to.
The last half hour is certifiably insane.
That's what I heard.
The last half hour of the movie is completely insane, yeah. But awesome. So I don't. I'm not quite. Again, I'm not qualified. I don't have kids, and you know, again, I saw The Exorcist at 8, so you see the way I turned out. So maybe it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
To take young people to see these kind of movies, but
I don't want the responsibility. We're watching Lion King.
Yeah, Lion King is a safe bet. Yeah, exactly right. You're not going to get into trouble. You're not going to get into trouble.
Right.
You know, like, what did you take him to see? Like, you know, if your ex is going to be like, what did you take him to see?
Uh-huh.
I took him to see the new Quentin Tarantino movie.
Better safe than sorry is my motto when it comes to co-parenting.
Yeah, there you go. Well, all right. Well, so it looks like you guys had a good weekend. You know, we missed the Monday morning movie reviews because I was off. But I want to take a break, and I definitely want to talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino's new movie with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio. I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely great. I think it's one of Tarantino's best movies. Incredibly funny. Like I've never laughed at a Quentin Tarantino movie that consistently and that hard. Mm-hmm. And Brad Pitt is spectacular. They're both great. They're both great. But Brad Pitt, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but Pitt's performance in the movie is really, really funny. And DiCaprio DiCaprio's fantastic in it, too. They're two of the best actors on the planet. And DiCaprio has a fantastic scene after he screws up during a taping of a Western TV show, and he's in his trailer and he has a meltdown in the trailer. It's really, truly one of the funniest things I've seen all year.
Four whiskey sours?
Yeah. Eight whiskey sours.
Eight whiskey sours. You couldn't have just had four.
Yeah. Well, I'll say, all right. So anyway, if you guys saw it over the weekend and you want to jump in, I know that both Eric and Steve both obviously thought it was pretty terrific. And let me tell you something. My mom loved it. My mom loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So both my parents did, my mom and dad. But my mom specifically like went kind of nuts over it, which is pretty cool. So if you saw it and you want to comment on it or you want to send a text or give us a call, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to talk Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino's new movie. And then after 1:30, our buddy Barry Levinson from the National Mustard Museum is going to join us to talk about National Mustard Day, which is this Saturday. We'll give you all the rundown and the schedule and all the fun activities that'll be happening and all the fantastic mustard that you can taste while you're there. Seems this world has got you down. You're feeling bad, vibrational friend. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. We'll get that. We'll play that a little bit later on. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two song, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's a song that is featured on the soundtrack of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is Quentin Tarantino's latest movie. I loved it. Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio. It's got a bunch of cameos from some of the regulars that you see in Tarantino's movies. And It's pretty spectacular. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and it goes by like that. It didn't seem long to me at all. And there's a lot of just like laid back like driving, and in the movie it is it was 2 hours and 40 minutes, and not a ton happens in the movie. But yeah, it's great, and the two leads are amazing. And the last half hour is certifiably insane. There are some really unbelievably funny moments in the movie. I laughed, especially Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt just killed me in the movie. I absolutely thought he was hilarious. A couple of other standouts. There's a 10-year-old girl who's in this movie. Her name is Julia Butters. And she has an extended scene with DiCaprio that is fantastic. She's great in it. She's absolutely great in it. And I'm trying, why am I blanking on who played Sam Wanamaker?
The director guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll find out. He was
Sam Wanamaker, by the way, real director. And the guy who played him in the movie, and I wish I could remember who he was, absolutely hysterical. And as Sam Wanamaker, the director of this sort of crappy, TV Western.
Which is a real Western.
Bounty Law that DiCaprio is starring in. He plays a once very, very popular movie actor who is now doing kind of crappy TV series and has kind of fallen. His career has kind of fallen on hard times. Brad Pitt plays his stunt double, who is also not working very much, and he's just basically, working for DiCaprio, like fixing his TV antenna. He's just basically a errand boy at this point. Drives DiCaprio around because DiCaprio can't drive anymore. And that's a hilarious flashback too, where they explain.
It's Nicholas Hammond.
Nicholas Hammond plays Sam Wanamaker. He's great. He's very, very funny in it. I also love the cameo that Damian Lewis makes as Steve McQueen at the Playboy Mansion. I love Damian Lewis. He's one of my favorite actors ever. And he's hilarious. He's only basically in one scene. But he even looked like him. And because, Damian Lewis doesn't look like Steve McQueen, but they actually, they did a nice job like making him look like 1969 era Steve McQueen. And by the way, Steve McQueen, you know, was supposed to be, did you know that he was supposed to be at Sharon Tate's, he was invited and was supposed to be at Sharon Tate's home the night of the murders?
That I did not know.
Yeah.
Because I'm currently in the process of reading Helter Skelter.
Which I read probably 40 years ago.
Still the best-selling true crime book of all time.
Well, did you ever see the miniseries?
I did not.
Steve Railsback plays Charles Manson in the miniseries, and it's really scary. It scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, obviously scary. Mikey Madison, who plays Max, the oldest daughter on Pamela Adlon's Better Things, has a spectacular part in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And, yeah. And like I said, the last half hour is absolutely nuts. But I think it's one of Tarantino. I really think it's one of Tarantino's best movies. It's incredibly entertaining. It's really, really funny. It's a wonderful sort of tribute. It was a wonderful sort of tribute to Hollywood of that era, the place, the movies. It's a personal film for Tarantino. Because of the time period and how fascinated he was. And he does an unbelievable job. By the way, John Dykstra did the visual effects for the movie. And they recreate, I mean, it looks fantastic. They recreate Hollywood Boulevard and Hollywood in general to 1969 flawlessly.
Excruciating detail.
Yeah, incredible. And just really, like, you feel like you're there. Robert Richardson, who is one of my favorite cinematographers, he shot the movie. It's beautifully shot. And it's just flat-out entertaining, you know? And then it's got a certifiably insane final half hour.
Out of curiosity, what do you think? Will it get nominated for anything for the Oscars?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you think? Who's going to get what in terms of nominations?
Well, I think, you know, Tarantino's going to get a screenplay nomination for sure. He might get nominated for director. I don't know. Maybe it'll get some big nominations. I'm not really sure about the acting, although the acting is great, but I'm not really sure, you know, how you split those two performances. But I think screenplay, I think Tarantino's a lock for screenplay. He's been nominated for screenplay, like almost every movie that he writes, he gets a nomination for it. I think he might get a director nomination, too. And it might even get Best Picture. I don't see it winning.
Yeah, I would definitely see the Best Picture nom.
Yeah.
I think the nod will come, but odds are he'll get that third win for just original screenplay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Leo for Best Actor.
Really? Well, yeah. I mean, he's a favorite, you know what I mean? Like, he's nominated all the time, and he finally won for The Revenant.
I wish he would win for this. Like, The Revenant was really cool, but...
No, he's much better in this.
So
this
is great.
Both of them are unbelievable in it. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin says, what's your favorite film this year so far? It's still Her Smell. That's still my favorite so far this year. And it's still I think, the best performance of the year, too, Elizabeth Moss.
She's a lock for Best Actress.
I don't know, man.
Oh, yeah, then Oscars do. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I don't know. And The Kitchen comes out, too, in a couple of weeks, and that looks fantastic. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
All right.
I thought that was one of the best movies I've seen in I don't know how long.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It's hard to talk about because there's so many great parts of that movie.
Yeah, and you don't want to give anything away either.
No, I'm not going to give anything away.
Because it is just so incredibly entertaining. And some of the other, like Kurt Russell Kurt Russell's in it. But, you know, like the scene with him and Zoe Bell after Brad Pitt throws Bruce Lee into the car. I don't know if I've laughed hard. I don't know if I've laughed harder at anything.
Well,
yeah,
I laughed at that, but I laughed even. I'm not going to give it a laugh even harder at the swimming pool scene at the end.
Yeah,
but that Bruce Lee scene was great. The little girl scene you were talking about was unbelievable, and that part of that scene in The Great Escape.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was so great.
I know.
That was so great. Yeah, no, I love that. I love that.
And, you know, I was 16 in 1969, and they had everything down in that movie. That was just...
Yeah. I mean, I was only four, so I don't remember much, and I was not in Hollywood in 1969, but man, they did a beautiful job.
I mean, the cars...
That's another thing, Tom. There's a real good chance it'll get nominated for visual effects.
Oh, yeah, got
because
to.
That's you know. And, first of all, John Dykstra is one of the greatest visual effects artists in the world, and recreating that time period was it was flawless.
And the scene where Brad Pitt goes to this the ranch, that was eerie.
It was great and really intense. And Bruce Dern, fantastic.
Yeah, he's been there for about 3 minutes, but he was great.
He was great. All right, Tom. Thanks, man.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Take care. There's another person who loved it. Steve says, from 312, he says, I saw the movie Saturday night, and I have to say that was the best performance by A-list actors I have seen. I'm so glad you like it, and I was so irritated when I heard folks hating the ending. There's a spoiler in this one text, so I'm not going to read it. But I love the ending. I don't care. I loved it, and I thought, like I said, the last 20 minutes of the movie is insane.
It was really interesting to see this one. I saw it with my girlfriend, who really has no context for who the Manson murderers were.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see, because she just had no idea what was supposed to happen. And I think a certain amount was lost on her.
What happens in the movie doesn't happen in real life.
Right, right.
But that's Tarantino's thing. Hitler was not killed in a movie theater and set on fire and shot. That did not happen. But it happened in Tarantino's history.
All I'm going to say is I really hope number 10 for him is the 14 Fists of McCluskey.
Well, yeah.
If we could make that a real thing,
I'd love to watch it. That would be fantastic. It would be fantastic. All right, let's take a break here. The news is coming up next, and then after the news, Barry Levinson is going to join us. He's the founder and curator of the National Mustard Museum. A big weekend for those guys. National Mustard Day is on Saturday, and we'll talk all about that right after the news, which is coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. We'll play that a little bit later on. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, so every year at this time, we like to have Barry Levinson come on. He's the founder and curator of the National Mustard Museum. And you can follow on Facebook and Twitter at Mustard Museum. You can also check out the website, which is mustardmuseum.com. And every year, the first Saturday of August, they have National Mustard Day, which is a huge celebration up there in Middleton, Wisconsin. And we love to have Barry on to talk about the Mustard Museum and National Mustard Day and all that cool stuff. So let's welcome Barry back to the show. Barry, welcome back.
Hey, Nick. Great to talk to you.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. You know, getting ready for Mustard Day is always a thrill. And this year, no different. Our theme this year, well, it's a Latin theme, at least the language of Latin, meaning carpe diem, which means squeeze the day.
That's right.
Yeah, so we're going to have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
Every year it's great. Culver's whips up a batch of frozen mustard custard. This year, vanilla mustard custard with raspberry swirl is the flavor.
There you go.
Yeah, I can't wait to taste it. Yeah, they're making it this week.
Yep. My producer Tom is making a face at the possibility of mustard custard. But tell him how good it is.
Oh no, it really is good. Just think of a nice sweet mustard with just a tang, and it's just a little sweeter than most. And then because fruit mustards are fabulous. A lot of things you can do with fruit mustards. I mean, they're great as a pretzel dip, but this one, I am just so excited that the head chef at Culver's has come up with this one. So, we've worked with them on this, and we're very excited about it. Of course, we're going to have Usinger hot dogs. Got to have that. Usinger's from Milwaukee. It's still a family business. And we've got lots of mustards to taste, games, great music starting at 9:30 with the Poop on You accordion band.
That's right. They always start it. They always start out. They always kick off the festivities. This is
wouldn't be Mustard Day without it.
This is the 29th annual.
I know.
29 years. That tell everybody about the first time you did it. I mean, it was just like
the first time it was just in our backyard. I think we had about a dozen people for a party. Now we get about 6,000 people coming. So it's just a huge festival for Middleton and really for the U.S. To celebrate something that so many people take for granted. I know in Chicago, you don't take it for granted because if you have a hot dog, you have to have mustard
on it
in Chicago. I mean, if you put that K stuff on it, no, that's just wrong.
Well, As you know, Barry, this is what I say. If you are over the age of 5 and you put ketchup on your hot dog, you should be arrested.
Absolutely. And not only that, there's conclusive evidence that ketchup is now the leading cause of childhood stupidity in America. So there.
I know. I'm always surprised by these facts that you throw at us. Well, Barry, listen, tell the story on how you started the Mustard Museum, because it's really a great story, and I never tire of it. Every year when you come on, you tell us how the whole mustard thing started for you. So,
It was October 28, 1986, the morning after my beloved Red Sox just lost the World Series. That was, of course, the famous Bill Buckner era series. That was game 6, but then they lost game 7, October 27. I couldn't sleep. I'm originally from New England, but I was living here in Madison, Wisconsin. I was so depressed, so bummed out. So I went to an all-night grocery store. It was actually Woodman's on the east side of Madison, Wisconsin, and I just was pushing an empty cart, crying, thinking, I need a hobby. I need something to take my mind off of my obsession with the Red Sox. So I turned down the condiment aisle. I remember going past the ketchups and the olives and the relishes, the pickles, the mayos, nothing. Suddenly, I was in front of the mustards, and I heard a voice that said, "If you collect us, they will come." That did it. That did it. I remember the very first jar was actually a jar of Plaquemines mustard.
Sure. You
know, which is a Chicago favorite. They're actually made in Mantino, Illinois right now. They've moved out of Chicago down on the south side. But that was the very first one. We now have 6,201 different mustards in the collection.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. People come from all over the world to see it. There's no admission charge. And there's no admission charge for National Mustard Day either. So really, there's no excuse for, it's a short drive from the Chicago area. It's, about 2.5-3 hours or so. And you'll have a great time.
Yeah.
Good music, games for the kids. We got a lot of different games this year, some new ones. We got Mustard Cornhole. We got Lucky Mustard Dice this year. We got the spinning wheel of fortune. It's just a fun thing for the whole family.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go through some more of the activities that are going to be there and some of the special guests and lots of really great music and stuff. I want to get into that, too. And so the Mustard Museum, it originally was in Madison?
No, it was actually originally in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin.
Oh, right.
Which is about 25 miles southwest of Madison or so. It's a nice little town, a village, actually. It's technically a village. And I started it in Mount Horeb because I wanted to get even with Mount Horeb because it was known for years as the town that hated mustard.
So really?
It's a Norwegian settlement. And as a result, the locals were not fond of any spicy foods. So 100 years ago, when doctors were using mustard plasters instead of, because at that time there was no such thing as aspirin or antibiotics, people refused to take their mustard plasters because it smelled like strong, spicy food, and they'd rather be sick. So a doctor moved there in 1912 and opened a clinic that's catered to this local aversion to mustard. He specialized in mayonnaise plasters. So people would go to him for a prescription for a mayonnaise plaster, and they would smear mayonnaise all over their bodies. And and he made a fortune. He actually made a fortune, and the clinic is still around. But it moved. It's no longer in Mount Horeb. It moved to Minnesota. That's the origin of the Mayo Clinic.
Wow, there you go.
There you go.
You know, it's, you know what else is really the only, you know, those the whole mustard that you're talking about, the mustard patch that people would put on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only reason that I know about that is because of the Three Stooges.
Because
they featured it in a few Three Stooges shorts, and I never really understood what it was, and then, you know, but now I do.
Yeah, they're called mustard plasters or mustard poultices. That was something. There's still parts of the world where they still do that. I think Eastern Europe, you can still find people that apply mustard plasters whenever they get sick.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
Everybody check out mustardmuseum.com. And so now you guys are open, you know, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., but usually 7 days a week, right?
Right, yeah, just about every day. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's free to get in. Mm-hmm. You can take out, look at all the mustards, and you sell mustard as well.
Yeah, in the gift shop, there are over 300 different mustards, and each one of them is available for tasting, you know, which I know is crazy.
Yeah.
But you can taste, you know, I think the record might be someone who's tasted about 95 mustards. He was trying to get for 100, and he said, I don't think I can do that.
He tasted 95 mustards?
Yeah, someone tasted, I think, 95 or 96 mustards. He was trying to get 100, and he just couldn't do it.
Wow. Wow.
But, yeah, you're welcome to do it. Just come up because, you know, if you go buy shoes, you try them on first, right?
Yeah.
So why shouldn't you do that with mustard?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Although, I got to tell you, go to a grocery store and say, hey, can I sample that mustard? And look at you like, no.
It's not going to go.
What do you think this is? That's a mustard museum?
Yeah, that's not going to go over. It's not going to go over very well. I can tell you. I can tell
you
that
right
now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so what are some of your favorites currently? Because I know that you get mustards in all the time, new mustards from all around the world. What are some of the ones that are standing out for you?
Well, this year's grand champion is a French mustard that's been around since 1632, I think. It's called Pommery Moutarde de Meaux, and it comes in a stone crock. And we will be having Josette LeBlanc from the company. Her English is getting better, but she will be demonstrating it. So, you know, please come up and meet Josette. It's a phenomenal mustard. It's grainy, and it's not hot, but it has a wonderful spice flavor to it. There are only a few ingredients because that's the way it was made, you know, 400 years ago. It's an amazing mustard. I like a lot of the French Dijon mustards as well. The classic Dijons is a walnut mustard. Also, there's a great grainy mustard made in Rock Island, Illinois, Bogies.
Mm.
The owner of Bogies is going to be at the Mustard Museum, so you can sample that one as well. There's a wonderful mustard, a dill pickle mustard from Terrapin Ridge. They're going to be there. We'll have plenty of French's mustard as well, because for some people, including me, sometimes you got to have that perfect squiggle of yellow mustard on your hot dog.
Yeah.
And I will disclose, you know, in the interest of fairness, to tell you that French's is a major sponsor of National Mustard Day and the Mustard Museum. You know, they've been very nice because the museum itself is a nonprofit. Like most museums. And we've got some great artwork. I think I've sent you some of the postcards of our artwork.
Yeah.
If you want to see a almost original Da Vinci and Diego Velázquez and Salvador Dali, they're almost originals, but they're fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, come see those. Come see the extensive collection of antique mustard tins. We've got over 450, I think. I think it might be even 500 by now. Mustard pots, mustard history, mustard everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well,
come on and do the mustard.
Yeah. All right, Barry, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right, mm-hmm. Barry Levinson is with us, and it is that time of year. This Saturday is National Mustard Day, and so go on up to Middleton, Wisconsin. At the National Mustard Museum, and have fun with all the activities. We'll get into some of the other stuff that's happening on the schedule and some of the other appearances that are going to be a part of it. But and again, it's 7 days a week. The Mustard Museum is open. It's free, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. There's a ton of mustard there that you can check out. There's also mustard that you can purchase. And check out the website, too, mustardmuseum.com. We'll talk more with Barry about all the fun stuff that's happening on Saturday, and we'll do that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Right. Well, Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesdays coming up. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Yeah. And we are also going to talk a little bit later on about highly rated movies that actually people hated. We'll do that coming up, too. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your 2 for Tuesday request. And then coming up, Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. This weekend is going to be a fun weekend for a lot of reasons, one of which is because Saturday, August 3rd, is National Mustard Day. And Barry Levinson, who is the founder and curator of the National Mustard Museum up in Middleton, Wisconsin, has played host now to, this is the 29th National Mustard Day celebration. Lots of great things will be happening up there, and we welcome Barry back to the show. Barry, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, we do have to mention, once again, Storm and Gorman. Gorman Thomas from the Brewers, legendary slugger from the Milwaukee Brewers. He's going to be up there again. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I met Storman Gorman a couple of years ago when he was just beginning to make his Carolina-style barbecue sauce. And if you know anything about South Carolina, you know that barbecue sauce is mustard-based.
Yes.
And he wanted to get it rolling, and so he talked to someone in the Brewers front office, and they said, you know, you should talk to this guy. He's got a mustard museum. And we just hit it off.
Yeah.
He's been a guest for the last couple of years. He is a lot of fun. He's a goofy guy, but you'll absolutely love him. And, you know, he is the he twice won the home run title, 1979 and then in 1982. He was the American League home run champion.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll talk to him. He is a guy who always got his uniform dirty. You know, you could count on him to either strike out, hit a home run, or make a diving catch and get mud all over him.
Yeah.
He just fun. He played with a lot of fun, and he's still that same guy. He's a little older now, and he's slowed down some, but.
Yeah.
You're going to love him. You got to come, and he'll be signing copies of his, jars of his mustard for you.
The barbecue sauce.
And it was actually last year's gold medal winner at the World Mustard Competition. It was a blind competition, and it won. It's a greatest thing in the world for pulled pork.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And speaking of pulled pork, you guys are going to be having pulled pork.
Yeah, Middleton Barbecue will be here as well. Yeah, there's going to be Kona Ice. You know, if it's a hot day, we're going to have shaved ice for people, lots of drinks, and hot pretzels for mustard. And, of course, the hot dogs, using her hot dogs. It's all part of a fundraiser for the nonprofit museum. And it's our biggest day. You know, we're going to see probably 6,000 to 7,000 people.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of room, and parking is great this year because there are plenty of places. Go on the website or just go to visitmiddleton.com/trolley. Because there are 9 different places around Middleton where you can easily park and take the trolley to Mustard Day.
Mm-hmm. All right, sounds great. Okay. And again, you know, the French's music stage, it kicks off at 9:30 with the Mustard Day Overture by the Poupon You Accordion Band.
Right, and then that will be followed by a very popular band, the Red Hot Horn Dogs, and then a couple of blasts from the past group, Speed Trap, City Electric, and Chaser, going all the way until 4 o'clock. So there's music. There's something called Kids Are People Too. It's an interactive kids show. So really, it's something for everybody.
Yeah, and so many other great things that are happening. You guys got games. There's a lot of different games. Two mm-hmm. new mustard games, you said.
Yeah, one of them is it's kind of a take on the old cornhole game. It's called Mustard Cornhole, and the other is called Lucky Mustard Dice. That we're still working out the rules, but you actually will have an opportunity. You know, if you're really lucky, you could win a Poupon You toilet seat, a genuine, legitimate, right? Poupon You toilet seat.
Yeah,
one size fits most.
There you go. You also have some mustard other games like Mustard Pitch, Feed the Curator. fishing for mustard.
Yeah, where it's great for little kids. You know, they get a fishing net and they get a bottle of mustard, and inside is something that tells you what kind of a prize you get. And there's all kinds of great prizes. You get a little mustard museum frisbee, a mustard keychain, a bottle of mustard, a book. We've even got giving away some copies of my children's book, Mustard on a Pickle. So, you know, everyone's going to win something.
Yeah. And you got the tasting tent and all kinds of great stuff. Yeah. And the museum itself, is open during this, so people can go in and check it out.
Sure. Yeah, and people are amazed to see that many mustards. You know, I never knew. Yeah, well, that's why it's called the Mustard Museum, because we got a lot of mustards.
Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be great. And I think you guys are going to have some nice weather. I was looking at the weather. I think it's going to be it'll be warm, but at least it doesn't appear that will be any rain in the forecast, as there has been there have been in the past.
Well, that's good. We've been very lucky. I think in 29 years we've had only one day where we pretty much got rained out.
Mm.
And I don't think people have to worry about snow either. I don't think snow is in the forecast.
No,
so
not yet.
We're good.
Yeah.
Not yet.
No, not yet. I do want to mention, as I often do whenever we have you on, my favorite mustard, which of course you know, is the Burtman's Ballpark Mustard.
Well, I want to tell you about another one, though.
Okay.
You're probably aware of the fact that there's always been this kind of a little tiff, a rivalry between two mustards from Cleveland, Burtman Ballpark Mustard and Stadium Mustard.
Right.
As well. Actually, the Stadium Mustard and, you know, these two families were warring for many years. I think that's over because the mom, who was just a great friend of mine, passed away about six or seven years ago from Burtman Ballpark Mustard.
Right.
But then the dad from Stadium Mustard passed away in June, David Dwoskin.
Mm.
And David was, by the way, the person who 25 years ago, he called me and said, "Hey, where do mustard makers go to college?" I didn't know. And he said, "Poop on you." So he's really the father of Poop on You.
Uh-huh.
And we have a wonderful kind of a shrine that his family put together dedicated to him. That is also the mustard that went into outer space on a couple of voyages. One was from on the Discovery. And also the space shuttle Columbia. Don Thomas, who was a native of Ohio, wanted to have his favorite mustard, which was Stadium Mustard, up in space. And we figured that the two times he did it, those two missions, was a total of 205 orbits of the Earth, which meant that mustard traveled 5.2 million miles in outer space.
Wow.
And I'm going to send you some of that one, along with the Burtman mustard.
Oh, thank you.
And I think the families have, I think, realized now that the war is over and they can exist together. And, you know, we can look back at the founders, David and then the mom who took care of Burtman Ballpark Mustard very fondly. You know, they were both great people. Loved being on the phone with them, and I miss them.
Yeah.
And the mustard world misses both of them.
Yeah.
So we're going to send you both of those, along with our Carpe Dijon Squeeze the Day T-shirt.
All right.
Got to have that one.
I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I'll never forget the first time I ever tasted that mustard. I was at County Stadium. At County Stadium, and you know, I just got a hot dog. I went over and I pumped some mustard on it. I took a bite and I went, "Oh my God!" And I went back up to the counter and I'm like, "What is this mustard?" And they're like, the person behind the counter is like, "You're not from Cleveland, are you?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not." And they're like, "Well, you can only get it here." And it's the best mustard I ever tasted on a hot dog, and I still love it. All right, here's we got a caller here. Here's Kathy on WGN. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
And love your guest. Quick question for you. Spike Odell from WGN used to sell his Bite Your Butt.
Right. Bite Your
Hot
Butt.
Mustard. Yes. Or
Bite Your Butt.
Bite Your Butt Mustard.
BYB.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It has been out of production for many years now. Are you familiar with any mustard that's currently on the market that most resembles it that we can still buy?
Oh, absolutely, because when that went away, we just took that mustard and said, well, we're going to just sell it because we designed it for Spike. And so it is now available, and it's our own mustard called Slim and None Sweet and Nicely Hot Mustard. So, and Slim and None is spelled S-L-I-M-M, and then the ampersand and N-U-N-N-E.
Ah.
And so,
I'm so glad I asked. Mustard.
All right, there you Slim go, Kathy. None. Kathy, yeah. It's available. Yeah. Slim and None. You can go to the museum.
Slim and None.
Mustardmuseum.com.
Yeah, come on up. Hey, Kathy, come on.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Kathy.
That's it.
Take care. Yeah, there you go. All right, Barry, always a pleasure. Have a great time on Saturday. And I love you guys up there at the National Mustard Museum. And have a good time on Saturday, okay?
Will do, Nick. Hasta la mustard.
Okay, buddy. Barry Levinson, everybody. Hasta la mustard. All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. We're going to be talking about, we're going to talk a little bit more mustard here. Mental Floss has put out an article here about things that you probably didn't know about mustard. And we had our fantastic expert Barry Levinson on with us, the curator of the National Mustard Museum up in Middleton, Wisconsin. They've got a big weekend here. Saturday is National Mustard Day, and they're going to have a great time with it. But we thought we'd talk a little bit more about mustard, too. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your Two for Tuesday. You made Two for Tuesday requests. So let's see. Hey, Tom. What was who requested the Melon Camp?
So that's coming to us from Wicker Park Bob.
Wicker Park Bob enjoys some John Cougar Melon Camp. So there you go. All right here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and let's get to it. So the Mustard Museum up in Middleton is really a lot of fun. And also, you should check out their website, the Mustard Museum, mustardmuseum.com, because you could get you could order through the website. Tons of different types of mustard. So, I mean, you should go up and visit. You should go up and visit the Mustard Museum, check it out, and purchase your mustard that way. But you can also conveniently go to mustardmuseum.com, and you can scroll through tons and tons of great mustards that you can get. But mustard may have truly come alive for Americans in the early 20th century when it was introduced to the hot dog, but its history is even longer and spicier than you might have guessed. First things first, mustard is a plant. Prepared mustard is a condiment. Although it's rarely necessary to specify prepared mustard when referring to the spicy spread, it only seems fair to acknowledge mustard's true roots. So it is a plant. But does anybody ever say, I would like some prepared mustard on my hot dog?
Well, I certainly always do.
Yeah?
When I'm in my best tuxedo. Ordering my prepared mustard on my hot dog.
Yeah. I have a couple of mustards in my fridge at home right now. I have the Burtman's baseball mustard, which is just fantastic. And then I have a grainy Koops bottle of Koops mustard, which is very grainy and really good.
I got to step up my mustard game.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm just rocking, I think, some French's.
Yeah, well, that's nothing wrong with that. That's classic yellow mustard right there.
But, you know, it's like sometimes I'm going to have bratwurst or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a different kind of mustard, something different.
Well, you know, like I said, man, to everybody, you check out mustardmuseum.com. There are so, I mean, obviously, Barry is a bit of a maniac when it comes to his mustard. He also likes his puns. Which is
yeah.
which is like the very first time we ever had him on. And I think we've had him on. Oh, man, it's got to be. I think Barry's been on this show maybe for at least 15 years. every year that they have it, at least 15 years he's been a part of the show. We always have him on, like, right before the Mustard Museum. We also had him on when his book came out. How about this? Broccoli is a not-too-distant cousin. As members of the Brassica or Sinapis genera, mustard plants are close relatives to a surprising variety of common vegetables, including broccoli, cauliflower, turnips, and cabbage. Wow.
Well, interesting bedfellows.
Yeah, that's a little crazy. Mustard goes way, way back. By some accounts, mustard was the first condiment humans ever put on their food. Egyptian pharaohs stocked their tombs with mustard seeds to accompany them in the afterlife. But the Romans were the first to grind the spicy seeds into a spreadable paste and mix it with some flavorful liquid, usually wine or vinegar. French monks, who mixed the ground seeds with must or unfermented wine, inspired the word mustard, which stems from the Latin mustum ardens, which means burning wine.
So those Greeks really had it going on.
It's going way back. Okay. The ancient Greeks and Romans used it as more than just a condiment. They used it as a cure for scorpion stings. Mustard paste was a miracle remedy capable of soothing pains and aches, and ancient Roman physicians used it to ease toothaches. They weren't alone. Over the years, mustard has been used for appetite stimulation, sinus clearing, frostbite prevention. It's now touted as a regulator, a dermatitis treatment, and even as an effective method of warding off gastrointestinal intestinal cancer. So ask your doctor if mustard might be right for you. Oh. Look at that. Let's see. 708 area code says hot sauce with mustard is the perfect combination for hot tamales. Hot sauce and mustard on a... Yeah, I can see that. 262 area code says, besides hot dogs, mustard is great on liver. I don't think I've ever had mustard on liver. It sounds like it would work.
Yeah, you put like a German mustard, real seedy.
Yeah. 301 area code says, what would hot dogs and pretzels be without mustard? It's unimaginable. Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I used to hate it.
You used to hate mustard?
When I was a kid?
Well, yeah. I can see that.
It's an acquired taste.
I bet little kids. Yeah, I can understand little kids not liking mustard. You know what I mean? I've always liked it. But again, we've talked about this before. I was not a picky eater when I was a kid.
No.
Like you mentioned liver. I loved liver when I was a kid. Liver and onions, loved it. Still do. But my parents did not have an issue.
Feeding you?
No way.
Oh.
Way into spinach when I was a kid. Still am. And I even like the canned stuff.
That's just where I draw the line, though. I can't.
I even love the canned spinach.
Well, you've said it before. Back in the day, everything came in a can.
Everything came in a can. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I no issues with broccoli.
Broccoli took me a while.
Yeah. I whatever my parents put in front of me, I'd be like, all right. I was not a picky eater.
There were three food groups growing up with a Scottish dad. It was beans, bacon, and whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah, that's got to be an interesting to grow up with Scottish cuisine.
Yeah, my mom, when we lived there when I was very, very, very young, my mom legitimately lost 20 pounds, and she was pregnant. And she lost 20 pounds because she just couldn't eat the food.
Really?
Back then, fresh fruit, not even on the table. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
The amount that things changed over the course of the last, 20 years is just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, now I can't even... We've talked about haggis.
I'm sure when you went even traditional Irish cuisine can be a little bit of a learning curve. Maybe not for you, the man who loves liver and onions.
Yeah. Everybody says that in English and Irish food is just, you boil it. You just boil it to death.
Yeah.
Everything just gets boiled to death. which I find very interesting. But I will say this, that, the nearly 3 weeks that my ex and I spent in Ireland, I had some of the best food I've ever had in my life there. I mean, truly, some of the best food I've ever had, I had in Ireland. And I know that, you know, the UK is not, well, Ireland's not in the UK, but the UK is not known for their cuisine in that area. So, how about this? Most of today's Dijon mustard isn't from Dijon. When the Romans conquered the Gauls, they brought mustard seeds with them, and these seeds took root in the fertile soil of France's Burgundy region. By the 13th century, Dijon had emerged as a hub of mustard production, which laid the foundation for the invention of the region's signature Dijon mustard in 1856. A simple ingredient swap added a new tang to old mustard. When Jean Naigeon thought to use verjuice, an acidic juice of unripe grapes, instead of traditional vinegar. A change so easy to replicate that the recipe couldn't be contained to a single city. Today, Dijon mustard can be made anywhere in the world. And it often is. So, all right, why don't we take a break here, and we'll talk more mustard facts in preparation for National Mustard Day, which is on Saturday. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's second in the twofer for John Mellencamp. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the number to talk or text us as we talk a little bit more mustard here. Some things you maybe didn't know about mustard. National Mustard Day is on Saturday, and the big celebration will be happening starting at 10 a.m. On Saturday morning. 9:30 a.m., actually. Let's go to the phones. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing, man?
All right.
Hey, I use mustard as a binder when I barbecue ribs.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that technique a bunch of times on whenever I watch like a lot of the cooking shows on TV. They recommend that. They recommend, you know, coating it in mustard, coating your ribs in mustard.
Right. I turn it up a notch. I'll also use ranch dressing.
Oh. That's interesting.
You know, a thin layer of mash, put the mustard in the ranch dressing, then I'll put my spices on the ribs. Falls off the bone all the time.
There you go. All right, Mike, thanks, buddy.
Take care. And, hey, if you interview the curator from the Mustard Museum, ask him about the BYB mustard.
Yeah. We did. We had him on at 1:30 after 1:30, and we asked him about
the radio on until 2:30. So.
Yeah, he was on with us just earlier. That's how we got on the subject.
Okay.
All right, Mike. Cool. Take care.
All right.
Yeah, people always remember the Spike's mustard. Bite your butt.
Yeah, I had never heard of it.
Yeah, well, it was very popular, you know, and. And so, you know, and Spike just is such a great guy. And
yeah, wasn't it I was reading, was it for charity or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was all for charity.
That's great.
And he retired at 55, Spike. And
wow.
moved down to Nashville. So he lives outside of Nashville right now and has just been, and I'll tell you something. He posts a lot of stuff on social media. He has a massive smoker. So speaking of ribs and all that kind of stuff, and brisket, all of it. Like he's constantly outside cooking.
Yeah.
And does quite a great job too. Because every time I look at the food that Spike makes, I'm going, oh man, I need to get down to Nashville and eat. But Spike would never invite me. No, I'm kidding. Spike and I, you know, Spike, I've told you this before, right? Every time I, every time some sort of, you know, Spike and I have any kind of, you know, communication with one another, he always disses Magnolia because he hated it so much and he can't believe it's my favorite movie. He's like, because he hated it. And it's a very, Magnolia is not for everybody. It's a movie that's not for everybody.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And yeah. And the key moment in the movie for me is, if you're on board, is when everybody sings Wise Up. When all the characters, it turns into a musical performance and all the characters sing Wise Up. I think it's a lovely moment, but that's the point where you're either on board or you're not. If you like that scene, if you like the scene where everybody is singing Wise Up, you'll buy the frogs. You'll have no problem with the frogs. If you don't, when the frogs fall, you're going to go, what the hell am I watching?
You're up and out.
Yeah. But yeah, Spike hates that movie so much. He's still, like, he won't stop. Like, even, you know, like, there were a lot of wonderful people earlier this month, you know, who posted some really nice things on my Facebook page on my birthday, you know, as you're wont to do. Spike posted, happy birthday, buddy, even though Magnolia stinks.
I like that. I like the commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really funny, too, because I'm trying to remember, because I still, obviously, Roy Leonard, who obviously gave me my start here, I owe my entire career to the guy. God bless him. He had me on his show, you know, reviewing movies, and he retired at the end of 1998, which is a year before Magnolia opened, and I would have loved to have reviewed that movie with him. And I don't remember whether Roy saw it or not, because, you know, like, after he retired, he was like, I'm not going to the movies every day anymore. I don't need to.
Yeah.
And then he started when I got the full-time gig in 2013, when I got the overnights here, and I was still doing a Saturday show. They were like, you can be on six nights a week. Mm-hmm. And so I asked Roy, when I got the gig in 2013, would he come back and review movies for me? Mm-hmm. And he did, and it was unbelievable full circle, because I started out reviewing movies for him on his Saturday show. And then he repaid me by saying, yes, I'll review, you know, movies on your show. And Roy, he had moved out of his house. Sheila's wife had passed away.
Right.
And so he had more time on his hands. And so he was like, yeah, I'll go to review movies. And the last movie he ever reviewed on my show before he passed was Richard Linklater's Boyhood, which he gave like a phenomenal. It was one of his favorite movies. It was like one of my favorite movies. And then. But then, you know, obviously Roy passed away, but having him on the show, you know, was great. And I don't remember whether he had seen Magnolia, because it was at that time when he was not going to movies.
Right. And it might have just went under the radar.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a box office success of any, no, you know, I mean, in any way.
And if I were him, the last thing I would need after I just retired
is a 3-hour movie that ends with frogs raining from the sky. I just can't picture Roy. Have I ever told you the movie that did it for him, where he's like, I'm retiring?
No.
I haven't told you that story.
Well, I'm surprised it wasn't Freddy Got Fingered.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Freddy Got Fingered. It was he was like, all right, I'm done, because he had, you know, worked in the business for a very, very long
time. Sure, legend.
And you know, and he was in his 60s too, so he was like, okay, I'm gonna get out of here right now. But I'll never forget it. It was right at the end of There's Something About Mary. He just looked at me and he went, okay, I don't think I can do this anymore. There's Something About Mary. For those people who wanted to know why Roy Leonard, the great Roy Leonard, retired, blame the Farrelly brothers, because it was There's Something About Mary. He was just, and I of course laughed my ass off during it. But that movie doesn't hold up as well.
No.
I mean, when I first saw it, I thought it was hilarious. And then I've watched it a few times afterwards. I'm like, my favorite Farrelly Brothers movie, without question, is Kingpin. That is one of the funniest movies and consistently hilarious to this day. Like, Dumb and Dumber is fine. I like it. It's funny. There's Something About Mary, doesn't hold up. But Kingpin, I mean, that movie, I can't even explain to you how, and I can't believe that movie got a PG-13. I don't know. I have no idea how they got away with that. But yeah.
I was into Shallow Hal for a little bit.
No, didn't do it for me. What's the one for the Siamese? It's Kinnear and Matt Damon.
Oh.
Stuck on You, or Stuck, was that what it was called? Because they were Siamese twins?
It's
It was a terrible
movie. Stuck on You.
Yeah, it was terrible.
But they did give us the animated classic, Osmosis Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, the good old Farrelly brothers, they made Roy retire.
Wow.
I remember sitting next to him during that movie, and Roy's not a prude. Roy was not a prude by any stretch of the imagination.
No, no.
Was not at all. And I knew Roy very, very well, you know, for many, many years. And he was as far from you can get as a prude.
Sure. I'm sure he's seen it all. Yeah.
But I don't know what it was about. There's something about Mary, man. I don't know if it was the hair gel scene. I have no idea. But he was just like, oh, man.
I mean, there's being risque, and then there's that.
Yeah.
There's just stretching the limits of good taste.
Yeah. Which the Farrelly brothers are good at.
Certainly are.
So, all right, why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more mustard. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 on this Tuesday morning. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Seeger?
It's coming to us from Mike.
Mike. All right. All right. We're talking mustard here. And some things that you probably didn't know about it. Like, for instance, King Louis XI didn't travel without it. The French monarch considered the condiment so essential to his culinary experiences that he kept a pot with him at all times, so as not to be disappointed if he were served a meal in a household that wasn't fully stocked. Wow.
I should try doing that.
Just carrying around mustard with you?
Yeah. Just a little jar of good mustard.
Just bring your... Bring your favorite condiment.
I do that with hot sauce.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, because there's some. I get some special hot sauces from different specialty stores, and like there's one that's like ghost pepper.
No.
It's a really sweet ghost. It's not that hot. No. It'll only burn your eyebrows off.
I'm not a. There's one thing. I'm not a big spicy guy.
No.
I don't do the hot sauces. I don't do the, you know, whenever I get like wings or something, they're either mild or not very spicy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do the, I don't understand how people can take this hot sauce stuff, like, you know, like the really like crazy hot sauce, yeah, and just dab it onto something. Do you ever see that video? It's a viral thing. Where the guy has celebrities on and they have to taste hot sauce.
Oh yeah, that guy went to my high school.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, Sean Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's good buddies with Mike Heideman.
Is he?
Yeah, because Mike Heideman went to he's from McHenry.
Mm-hmm.
So not far from me, and him and Heideman were pals.
Well, I think that show is hilarious.
Oh, it's so funny.
It's so fun to watch.
Hot Ones.
Hot Ones. And it's and like he basically brings out a bunch of hot sauces that get increasingly hotter on the Scoville scale. And my favorite, I mean, there's a lot of very good ones, but I think Key and Peele was... Key and Peele, did you see the Key and Peele one?
Yeah.
Where Keegan-Michael Key is just going, you go to hell, Sean. You go to hell. After he had me.
He's gotten some really big names. He's...
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh,
it's
how he pulls
it off. Yeah, yeah. You go to hell, Sean. You just go right to hell.
Did you see the one with Aubrey Plaza where she put milk in her nose or something?
Yeah. She's a weirdo. I love Aubrey Plaza because she is a weirdo. All right, how about this? Mustard has many, many faces. Dijon isn't the only place with a favorite local mustard. Other common regional mustard varieties include American, the familiar yellow squeeze bottle stuff, English, so-called French mustard, actually invented in England as a less spicy alternative to English mustard, Bavarian sweet mustard, Italian fruit mustards, Midwestern beer mustard, Creole mustard, and so many wildly different German mustards that the phrase German mustard is essentially meaningless. We were talking about that with Barry a little bit earlier on, about how many different types of mustard there are. A lot of people are surprised by the whole fruit mustard thing and how that works as a combination. How about this? The famous Grey Poupon ad turned the mustard market on its head. The upscale mustard brand's iconic 1984 Rolls-Royce TV commercial sparked a boom in sales for Grey Poupon, which had been lagging far behind the reigning American favorite French's classic mustard, classic yellow mustard. By marketing the more expensive spread as one of the quote-unquote finer things in life that even an average shopper could afford, Grey Poupon broke buyers' previously unquestioned devotion to a plainer sort of condiment. Moreover, many test audiences only needed one taste of Grey Poupon to immediately switch their allegiance. Yeah, Grey Poupon's a good mustard. Boy, that's a classic commercial. That is a classic commercial, though. And a lot of people found it really annoying. I actually thought it was a pretty funny commercial. Yeah, about this. It is said to be America's silver medal spice. Peppercorns are the most used spice in the United States. Mustard comes in second. How about that? Two countries, Canada and Nepal, are responsible for most of the world's mustard. In addition to their main ingredient, most mustards have one thing in common, the ingredient's country of origin. Together, Canada and Nepal's crops account for more than half of global mustard production. So thanks, guys. Ah. How about this one? Mustard yellow is a lie. The particular shade of yellow to which mustard lends its name owes its hue not to mustard seeds themselves, but to the vibrantly colored turmeric added for an extra kick of spice and brightness. Crushed mustard seeds alone vary from pale yellow to dark brown depending on their variety. But turmeric yellow doesn't sound quite as good as mustard yellow. No, it doesn't. And, of course, this gets mentioned. Middleton, Wisconsin is for mustard lovers. As we were talking about a little bit earlier. Any foodstuff calls itself beloved if there is not a museum established in its honor. Southern Wisconsin is proud to call itself the home of the National Mustard Museum, which boasts more than 5,566 jars, bottles, and tubes from all 50 states and more than 70 countries. It's got more than that. We heard the update already. It's well over like 6,500 or something like that now. That jar of mustard in the back of the fridge is probably fine. Despite its creamy texture, mustard is fundamentally nothing more than a blend of spices and acidic liquid, none of which have the potential to truly spoil. Refrigeration is advised to keep mustard's spicy kick from dissipating too quickly, but it isn't strictly necessary. The mustard's flavor will decline over time, but unless rogue food particles have gotten into the container, there's nothing to worry about except mediocre mustard, of course. So there you go. 773 area code says, the Chicago Bears also use mustard as an anti-inflammatory, which is top leading anti-inflammatory, but is so good that you are also as licorice as an anti-inflammatory for your stomach for your stomach's natural medicines. So yeah, we were talking about how the mustard is an anti-inflammatory. They still do, but do you ever see those mustard packs in the Three Stooges when they would put like mustard packs on their back?
I don't remember. I'm not as well versed in the Stooges as you.
Oh man.
I caught. I remember growing up. I think Rich was still doing Stoogapalooza.
Yeah,
that was happening when I was relatively young, and I'd be at my grandma's house watching the U, and he'd be doing it. So I remember
it would be 4 hours of Rich every Saturday.
Yeah,
because it was 7 to 9 was Stoogapalooza, and then 9 to 11 was Fenn.
Yeah, and I remember that would be definitely Stoogapalooza would be on, and then I would usually just be nervously waiting for Saturday Night Live to start.
Oh,
because I didn't get to watch that at my house.
My grandma let me
so
watch
it was
SNL.
It was kind of like forbidden.
Yeah,
who was in the cast at that time?
I mean, I really didn't start watching it until so that was like Tina, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Andy was had maybe just started. Fred Armisen was definitely in the mix. So I still vividly remember one of the earliest sketches that I got to watch was the the Woomba.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like Andy Samberg, when you know when he brought the digital shorts to SNL, that was a game changer.
Yeah, because I was in middle school by that point, and we were all freaking out because we thought Lazy Sunday was the funniest thing we'd ever.
Well,
seen.
You know, the thing about that is that eventually started the trend that people continue now, which is people watch Saturday Night Live on Monday at work mm-hmm. in little segments. Like all the sketches are available, you know, and that's how people, a lot of people watch it. I watch it every Saturday live. But that's, Lazy Sunday started all that. Although that was not the first digital short.
No, first one was the
lettuce, where it's him and Hader sitting on a stoop eating a head of lettuce like an apple.
What I have to ask you this one because this was a real viral sketch. What's your read on David S. Pumpkins?
Oh, I love it.
I don't get it.
I love it.
I don't get it.
The
man.
First time I saw it, that was a great night because that was when the Cubs beat the Dodgers. To go to the World Series.
I do remember that.
That's when the Cubs beat the Dodgers, and that was the birth of David S. Pumpkins. I think it's hysterical. I absolutely hilarious. any questions? Yes, several.
I just thought I thought it was a little bit too. I thought they were trying a little hard to be totally out there. There's no, it's basically an anti-joke. Like, there's no punchline. The punchline is just...
It's just him.
It's just him.
Yeah. No, I think it's hysterical.
I mean, America agrees.
Yeah. No. And it's, you know...
I was one of the few that didn't get it.
That was Moynihan's idea.
Of course
Bobby Moynihan. yeah. No, I think it's great. Now, you've seen the potato chip sketch, right?
Yeah. You introduced me to
genius.
The potatoes. Chips, guys.
Genius. Genius. I remember the first time I... Please do not eat my potato chips. The first time I saw that sketch, my ex and I were like... I could not stop laughing. It's just one of the weirdest sketches ever. But yeah. That's way up there on some of the... I mean, you know, there's they always take... You know, the 1250 sketch is the sketch... Where they put the weirdest stuff, like if it's you know because they figure it's a 12:50 sketch, somebody might not even be watching at that point. It's 11:50 in our central time zone, but they call it the 12:50 sketch, and that's where you'll find some of the weirdest stuff. For instance, Wayne's World. Lauren didn't like Wayne's World. Wayne's World started out as a 12:50. The potato chip sketch was a 12:50 sketch. Bill Brasky. That was the first time they ever did Bill Brasky. That was a 1250.
He showers in vodka.
Oh man.
And feeds his kids shrimp scampi.
That is like vintage Farrell and McKay. Like vintage. That and I love the you remember the episode where Chris Parnell and Molly Shannon play a couple who've just had a baby and they go in to talk to Will Ferrell, who's the doctor.
Yeah.
And then Tim Meadows comes in and goes, I can't help your child, but I can do the robot. And then he does the robot and goes, that'll be $5,000. That was a 1250 sketch. That's vintage McKay and Farrell.
I know a lot of John Mulaney stuff before he started landing
yeah.
would wind up in the 1250 because yeah. they had that lobster one.
Well,
right?
That was cut. That got cut. Yeah,
okay.
Well, that got cut. He tried to get that. That sketch on like three or four times, and every single time Lauren was like, no, we're cutting it. And then he finally got it on when he hosted, and it's one of the best sketches of last season. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, the whole Les Mis thing and the
yeah
and Keenan, you know, as the lobster, I it's just I thought it was brilliant.
And the bodega,
when
he brought that one in. Jeez.
Yeah. So, yeah, Mulaney. My problem with Mulaney is I think he's a really funny writer. There's something about his mannerisms and his delivery that make me nuts.
Really?
Oh yeah. I think he's a funny writer. I really do, but I can't watch his stand up because I want to punch him. It's just
really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I've seen him like 3 times live.
Yeah, no, I can't. The mannerism, the attitude, there's just something about it. But his material is great, and he was a great writer on SNL.
Sure.
I mean, Stefan, that's him and Hader.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why it's so funny is because Mulaney would change the jokes before air. Mm-hmm. And so Hader's looking at these jokes that are just, you know.
Just a total absurdism.
What was the one? They have the Jewish, what did he say? They have, it was a Halloween episode. And he's like, they have the Jewish Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
And what's his name?
Oh,
Norman Applebaum.
Yeah. Jew Diamond Phillips.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, I mean, the Stefan stuff was always great. But, it's just his mannerisms and his delivery make me nuts.
I can understand that.
Yeah. So, all right, let's break here. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, and we'll be back after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and your 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Requests, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter. With Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. We've been talking about mustard. And it's National Mustard Day is Saturday. And they're going to have the big party up there in Middleton, Wisconsin. We had Barry Levinson on, who is the curator of the National Mustard Museum. And National Mustard Day kicks off on Saturday morning at 9:30. It's going to be great. So we've been talking a little bit stories about mustard. 847 area code says, I worked at the Arlington Park Hilton in the 70s and waited on Louis Jourdan, who did the Grey Poupon commercials. He carried that mustard with him always and would ask for a plain salad and oil and vinegar on the side, and he would make his own dressing with his mustard. Wow.
That's a flex. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So it's nice to know that some celebrities actually use the product that they're endorsing, because sometimes they just take the money and go, yeah, I don't drink Coke.
Reminds me of the thing from Once Upon a Time, the Red Apple cigarettes commercial
at the end. You got to stick around, by the way. You got to stick around for the post credits when you see it. My parents had to go to the bathroom, so they missed the two things at the end of the credits. Which were hilarious. I hate this picture.
Who put this here? These cigarettes stink.
Yeah. What did he say? Very little throat burn?
Yeah, yeah. There's hardly any throat burn on these unfiltered cigarettes.
Man, oh man.
Oof.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, everybody. It's so good. It is really, 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 really good. And really funny. Like, I didn't expect it to be as absolutely hilarious as it was. But DiCaprio's meltdown in the trailer again. So hilarious. And the dog steals the movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy.
Brandy the dog.
Yeah, Brandy the dog. Special skills. The dog has special skills.
I will say the bit with when you see Brad Pitt's trailer, you know, where he's hanging out. My girlfriend looked over to me. She's just like, you see,
If you didn't have me, that's you. I'm just like, you're probably right, honestly, eating mac and cheese straight out the pot.
I just, the whole scene in the trailer is fantastic. That whole thing.
Well, it gives you a real idea of who this guy is.
Yeah.
At the Van Noy's drive-in as well.
Right.
Immaculately recreated.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I mean, all of the recreation of stuff in Hollywood is because there's a lot of time spent in cars, people driving around in cars, especially Brad Pitt drives around in this white Cadillac convertible. No, it's not a convertible. Is it a convertible? No,
it's not a convertible, but it's a gorgeous car.
Yeah, beautiful car.
That's the one thing I walked out of really jealous of, like, what I wouldn't give to be driving any of those cars.
Yeah.
Any of them.
Oh, and he does, you know, as he often does, he does throw the foot fetish stuff in there.
I can't tell if he was doing it just to tick off his critics or if he was just like...
When he picks up the hitchhiker and she sticks her feet right in the center of the screen on the windshield, I was like, come on, man.
I think that was, to me, that was him just saying, like, do something about it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. Who played that? Who played the hitchhiker? She was great.
She is, I believe she is the daughter of someone relatively well known as well.
She's great. She's
absolutely.
She's fantastic in the movie. Brad Pitt picks up this hippie hitchhiker who happens to live, you know, the movie ranch with the other Manson disciples. But yeah. So yeah, you should see the movie and make sure you stick around for the for everything that's after.
Margaret Qualley.
Margaret Qualley. I don't know her. I only know her.
Well, she's a star on the rise. She was in The Nice Guys.
She was?
Yeah.
Who did she play in Nice Guys?
Oh, and she's also in Fosse Verdon.
What would she play in Fosse Verdon?
She was Anne Reinking.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Oh, yeah. She's great. She was great in Fosse Verdon.
And then Amelia Cutner in The Nice Guys. I can't, you know, I just feel bad because she's just one of the many women that gets bumped off in that movie.
Yeah.
So.
I thought that movie was great.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was the best thing Shane Black had done
in
years.
And I thought the two of them were, I mean, I thought they were both great. But Gosling is hilarious in that movie.
You know, that's a pretty good movie to pair with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It
does some very similar stuff.
Absolutely.
Very similar stuff.
Well, I mean, Shane Black has done that kind of stuff before, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is another one that, you know, I love that movie too. So, all right. Well, it's out there. You should see it. And then don't forget about your mustard. But we are going to talk about movies that are highly rated that actually people hate.
Yeah, even Once Upon a Time has got its significant critics.
Oh, yeah. No. I know. I really disagree with anybody who's giving Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a bad review. I just think it's great. And again, Kurt Russell, man. So, all right. We got the news coming up in just a couple of minutes, and there you go. And remember, the Mustard Museum, it starts at 9:30 a.m., the big National Mustard Day, starts at 9:30 a.m. With the Poop on You band, accordion band, playing the opening. And it runs all the way through 4 o'clock, and it looks like it's going to be nice weather. I don't think they're going to get rained on. Tons of stuff for kids to do, games and activities, all kinds of mustard tastings. They got hot dogs, they got pretzels, they got barbecued pulled beef. Storm and Norman's going to be there. Storm and Gorman is going to be there with his barbecue/mustard sauce. And again, it's all free, so you should definitely check it out. And if you want more information, and also just to if you want to check out some really crazy different kinds of mustards, like hundreds and hundreds of kinds of mustard, you should browse it at the website. So, and that is mustardmuseum.com. So, and have some fun this weekend. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got the news, and then after the news, we're going to talk about highly rated movies that people actually hated. That's coming up right after the news, which is after this. Spike Odell request this?
No, actually, it was our friend Lou who actually requested this, like, top of the show.
All right. Before we even talked about Magnolia and that this is the turning point of the movie. So there you go. Thank you, Lou. That's Amy Mann from Magnolia. Actually, though, that song was first used in Jerry Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's weird because it like so completely fits in with Magnolia. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of Magnolia was written around her songs. Like Paul Thomas Anderson was listening to her stuff while he was writing Magnolia. So it was funny because like he caught Paul Thomas Anderson caught a lot of hell for making Boogie Nights so long. And so he's like, all right, fine. I'm going to make my next movie is going to be like 88 minutes. Then he makes Magnolia and it's 3 hours and 7 minutes long.
How long is Punch Drunk?
90 minutes.
Yeah. I was going to say that's when he was like, all right, I'll do.
No, it's really short. It's really, it's really short. It's less than half the length of Magnolia.
You can watch it twice.
Yep. In the time that you can watch Magnolia once. So. Yeah. All right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. You know, there are some highly rated movies that people actually hated. BuzzFeed put out the word here. We recently asked the BuzzFeed community to tell us about popular movies that they thought were overrated, and more than 400 submissions later, let's just say that they did not hold back. So what do you guys think? What would fall into that category? Highly rated movies that people actually hated. Popular, really, really popular movies that you think are overrated. 312-981-7200. Here's Ike on WG. Whoa, wait a minute. What the hell was that? Here's Ike on WG. And hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Okay. Okay, when you talk about overrated movies, you got to mention this because this is like the poster boy of everybody talks about it. Of course, I'm talking about Titanic.
Yeah, I like Titanic. So, I mean, I think, you know, I do think that, you know, that all the money that it made, all the Academy Awards that it won was a little much, but I still think it's a good movie. But yeah, I can understand why people think it's overrated.
Yeah, there are some good stuff in how the ship went down and everything, but the whole thing, the love story, and nominated for 14 Academy Awards, that's too much.
Yeah.
And winning 11, that's too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Titanic is that I didn't really care about the love story very much, you know. But once the boat hits the iceberg, it rules.
I mean, it's very cool. Just,
you know,
it's an amazing feat of technical engineering and set design, and
yeah,
and that's what James Cameron does best. Is, you know, he pushes the envelope of what can be done.
Yeah, he does. He does. And sometimes that gets in the way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, well, Avatar is the, you know, is the spokesperson for that, you know? And do we really want 4 more Avatar movies? I mean, I don't
know anybody over the last, what?
Like 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
That was really clamoring to go deeper into the world of Avatar. Yeah. I really don't know a lot of people. They were just like, yeah, that was a really cool movie. I'm glad I saw it in IMAX 3D, which it's an amazing thing to see. It's just that underneath the veneer, there's really not
a
whole lot going on.
Stupid movie.
Yeah.
Well, here are some of the highly rated movies or movies that people think are overrated that they went out and spoke on this BuzzFeed. La La Land. I don't care. I love La La Land.
La La Land is incredible.
It's great. It's great. I love that movie. And I know that there was a lot of backlash against it. Someone writes, it did not deserve all the awards. The plot was boring and predictable. The script was mediocre. They cast actors who weren't singers or dancers, and they made a movie about saving jazz starring two white people.
I'll listen to that critic. That last bit, yeah. I get. I understand that.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is just a delight.
It's from the opening number. I mean, the opening number alone is, I mean, fantastic. I think La La Land is great. I make no apologies for liking that movie.
I think sometimes people have a problem with celebrating, because that's like a very old Hollywood movie. Mm-hmm. I think this and Once Upon a Time are birds of a feather in a certain way, because they visually reference and openly celebrate the legacy of the golden age of Hollywood. And I think some people have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
In Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I really love the scene where Sharon Tate goes to watch Wrecking Crew. I love that scene. I also love the fact that he didn't put Margot Robbie in the scene.
Yeah, it's actually Sharon Tate,
and I thought that was kind of interesting that he would do that. But yeah. All right, Avatar.
Of course.
Yes, visually it's stunning, but take away that and you have a bland, predictable story that has been done one too many times. Yeah, I couldn't believe how much I disliked Avatar when I saw it. I don't care about that. You know, like, okay, visually, fine, great. Nice special effects. Saw it in 3D, okay, great. But it's stupid. A Quiet Place. What? I do not get the hype for A Quiet Place. It's just kind of sad and sort of boring and not at all scary. I was so excited to watch it, but then I was let down, someone said. I think Quiet Place is a terrific movie.
One of the most inventive movies of last year.
I will say this. It's scary, too. I don't care. Quiet Place is a scary movie.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I loved about A Quiet Place, I saw it twice in the theaters. And one of the things I loved so much about this movie is that it made the audience shut up. Nobody made a noise. There was like not even rappers, not even loud crunching. It was as if the people in the theater didn't want to kill the people up on screen if they made any noise.
That's a good way of putting it.
And you could hear a pin drop. Both times I saw it in the theater, it was the quietest audience as I've ever seen. And I would personally like to thank John Krasinski for making a movie in which the audience made no noise. There were no cell phones. There was no people whispering. There was nothing. You could hear a pin drop. And that sucked you in even more.
Mm.
I think Quiet Place is great. No, I can't believe they're making a sequel.
Well, it's just one of those things. When you have a big success on your hands,
yeah, but
they want to capitalize on it. I feel like it kind of just needs to exist as its own thing, but... You know, yeah, that's not the movie landscape we live in right now.
I know,
it's sequels.
But there's a definite ending to that movie. And there are certain characters that won't come back, that can't come back,
mm-hmm.
which are very vital to the movie. And I'm not going to give anything away, but that scene where the one character does what he does is one of the most powerful moments in the entire movie.
Yeah, it's great.
Inception. Who doesn't like Inception? I know a lot of people don't like Inception. I happen to love it.
I think it's very, very good.
After loving Shutter Island, I was super keen to see another Leo movie, so I went to the cinema to see Inception. I found it so dumb and super confusing, but so many other people were wowed by it, and I have no idea why.
Because it's great. It's startlingly original.
I thought Inception. You know, the thing is, what's really funny is that I really, really like a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies, except for the Batman movies. And I know that that's not a popular opinion at all, but I don't like any of the Batman movies that he made. I know a lot of people don't like Dark Knight Rises.
That one's generally considered to be.
But like, I can't stand Dark Knight. Didn't like Batman Begins, but I pretty much like or love all of his other movies. Especially if they're one word titles with the first letters being I and N. Because you have Inception, you have Interstellar, and you have Insomnia.
I cannot support you on Interstellar.
That's my favorite Christopher Nolan movie.
Oh my God,
that movie destroyed me, man. I was sobbing watching that movie. I absolutely thought it was great. So, how about this, Heathers?
That's just incorrect.
Well,
that's not an opinion that anybody should hold.
Here's the thing. When that movie came out, I remember, you know, Roy gave it a pretty good review, and I gave it a rave. And I remember Kathy O'Malley got very upset because she thought it went too far. She didn't like a lot of the jokes, and it was she thought it went too far, and. But that's the nature of a black comedy. You know what I mean? I think Heathers is great. And I also I think it's a very accurate sort of portrayal of what teenage life was like in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But here's somebody who says Heathers was horrible. It was so hard to follow the plot. What?
It's pretty straightforward.
Is it is it a complicated plot? I don't remember Heathers being a very complicated plot.
I would say not particularly.
So I didn't know what the hell was happening half the time. I love Winona Ryder, but that movie sucked. What?
I can understand objecting to the content.
Yes.
I think that's about as valid as it can get, but in terms of craft, that is an incredibly well-crafted narrative, incredibly well-acted.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. But yeah, I remember when it came out, it was pretty controversial when it came out. This was, you know, you weren't even around.
Yeah.
Came out in 1988, and it caused a stir. It really did, because of the subject matter and how it took on, you know...
Took on teen suicide.
Teen suicide, and it did it in a way that was really, really dark.
Mm-hmm.
But I was with it from the beginning, mm-hmm. from the get-go. I thought it was great.
That's something I just get to kind of take for granted, is that like, oh yeah, of course you can make Heathers. It's genius.
Yeah.
Not realizing that in 1988.
No, it was
probably...
No. It was quite controversial when it came out. You know, I remember we talked about it a lot on Roy's show. You know, like people were like, how could you like a movie that makes fun of teen suicide? It's not making fun of teen suicide. You know, I mean, it takes it very seriously, I think. It's a black comedy. You know? Nuclear War is not hilarious, but Dr. Strangelove is.
Exactly.
That's like... So, anyway. All right, let's take a break here, and we are talking about overrated movies. Maybe you hate them, but everybody else loves them. These are very, very popular, high-rated movies that have an opposite opinion or two about them. 312-981-7200.
You look like...
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And that was a twofer from Amy Mann, both from the Magnolia soundtrack. 312-981-7200, two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Yeah, so BuzzFeed got this group of movies together and... that were very popular and usually highly rated, but there are comments here where BuzzFeed users decided that they don't like it. They do not like these movies. What are some movies that are well loved that you don't love, that are you think are overrated, that most people like but you don't? 779 area code says Titanic, Steel Magnolia, and You've Got Mail. I actually like You've Got Mail. I do, man. I do.
Is that Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan. I hated Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
I hated that one. But for some reason, I liked You've Got Mail. I can't even explain.
That's got to be a weird movie to watch in 2019.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit of a dated reference.
It is. It is. Although I still have an AOL account.
Which I don't know how that's even possible.
Yeah. Yep. Proud of it. Me and Eric Childress.
Wait, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
guys. Wow.
Yep. Doc says, Nick, there are two that fellow moviegoers had mixed reactions the day that I saw them. Not sure of the box office, but did see a much higher than usual amount of walkouts by The Impatient and Unfulfilled. That would be Tree of Life by Terrence Malick and Melancholia by Lars von Trier.
I love Tree of Life.
Tree of Life is a masterpiece.
Melancholia.
Eh.
I think it's certainly more palatable than some other stuff.
Lars von Trier's done. No. You're right. It's more watchable than a lot of his stuff. But I love Tree of Life. That's awesome. I like most Malick movies.
Yeah.
A Knight of Cups was eh.
His more recent stuff has been
the song. What the hell was a song to song?
Song to song. Yeah.
That wasn't very good.
He's doing some interesting. He's got a new one coming out though. That seems to be a return to form.
Well, at one point he was putting out 9 movies a week. Remember, he didn't work for like 30 years, right? And then all of a sudden, I'm going to do a movie every 5 months.
Yeah, because he did Badlands.
Yeah.
Days of Heaven.
And then that's it.
And then Thin Red Line.
Thin Red Line.
In 98.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
20 years later.
My God.
You know what one of my favorite Terrence Malick movies is? Like, I don't know. It might be my favorite. New World.
It doesn't get a lot of the love that it probably deserves.
I think it's great. I think it's gorgeous. And I think the female lead in it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Colin Farrell. But I think that movie is absolutely beautiful.
Like, it's
breathtakingly beautiful.
I think The Thin Red Line is better than Saving Private Ryan.
Oh. Pff. They're not even in the same. Come on, man. They're not even in the same category. You kidding me? Thin Red Line is 9,000 times better than Saving Private Ryan. Saving Private Ryan has a great opening 15 minutes. And then it just becomes as predictable as you can possibly get.
I get a lot of flack for that, though.
No, Thin Red Line is 8,000 times better than Saving Private Ryan.
I've definitely been referred to as a pretentious ass.
Well, yeah.
They're just like,
well, but that's
it's
the
just
thing.
Jim Caviezel talking about trees and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but it's poetic.
No, it's. No. People catch a lot of hell for liking Malick's movies. A lot of people, like Eric, hates Terrence Malick.
That doesn't shock me.
Eric hates him.
Yeah.
I've got a lot more page, but I think Tree of Life is a gorgeous movie.
Yeah, no, that's like the peak of everything he had done up to that point.
And again, Brad Pitt. And that's the first time we all saw Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain. That's
that it. was you know, like, she had made like 4 movies that were. I remember when she first hit this when she first hit the screen. She was like, "Look, you guys are gonna," because she was brand new. Like, nobody knew who she was. I didn't know who she was. When I saw Tree of Life, I had no idea who Jessica Chastain was. Now she's, like, one of my favorite actresses. But I remember her saying, look, you guys are going to get real sick of me. Because apparently, 2 of the other movies that she made were on the shelf for a couple of years, and they were all just being rushed out. So she had 4 movies out in 1 year.
Yeah, she had a moment. She had a really big moment.
And she was like, I remember she was on, I can't remember what talk show it was, one of the late night talk shows. And she's like, look, you guys are going to be, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm going to be in so many movies at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Although
looking forward to It Chapter 2.
I am too.
Did you see that runtime?
Yeah.
Nearly 3 hours for it. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's got such a great cast, though. I mean, you know, you got Bill Hader, you got McAvoy, who's like one of my favorite people on the planet,
right.
Chastain. It looks really creepy, too.
Well, and they're adapting a 1,500-page novel, so, I mean, that just kind of comes with the territory, but still.
847 area code. These are movies that they think are overrated that a lot of people really are. They're well-rated. Out of Africa was slow for me. I just couldn't get into it while others just loved it. I like Out of Africa. It is languid, to be sure, but I liked it. I thought the chemistry between Robert Redford and Meryl Streep was really pretty great.
Languid. I like that's a that's a $5 word.
That's a $5 word. Learned it last week. All right, on the BuzzFeed, Bohemian Rhapsody. Oh, okay.
Yep.
It says, I'm sorry, but Bohemian Rhapsody was bad. The soundtrack was amazing, but it really has nothing to do with the movie. The whole movie was staged like a slideshow. They never focused on an event long enough for you to get a real emotional grip on the scene. I'd rather just watch Queen music videos on YouTube than that overhyped charade. Well, everybody knows how I feel about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yep, yep, yep.
I can't stand that movie. And again, you can, you know, for those people who are like, yeah, but the Live Aid thing, you know what? You can actually see the real performance by the real band and the real Freddie Mercury on YouTube. It's out there and it's free.
You don't say.
Yeah. that sort of like argument about, yeah, but the Live Aid recreation is amazing. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Go to YouTube right now. You can see the real thing. That movie just made me angry because it was just filled with lie after lie after lie about Freddie Mercury's life.
And I was just remarkably bored throughout most of it.
Oh, me too.
And when I wasn't physically nauseous from the editing was so all over the place that I honestly, my eyes hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, just not a fan of it at all. It just made me mad. You know, 98% of that movie is a lie. And I happen to be a really, really, really big Freddie Mercury fan. And so the movie did not sit well with me. The Hate U Give. The first time I watched it, I recommended it to everyone. I absolutely loved it. But once I dug more into the plot and rewatched some scenes, I realized the film itself wasn't really self-realized. It was written by a white screenwriter, and it really shows. The whole plot shifts away from targeting the cop who shot Starr's unarmed friend to instead demonizing the neighborhood drug dealer and fueling the black-on-black crime trope. And Amanda Stenberg's entire performance is a series of shots with her with a clenched jaw, and it made me realize that it wasn't that good. All right, more movies that are highly rated by some people and hated by others or overrated. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. Well, I went down yonder in Louisville. Lived a cat named Big Bad Bill. I wants to tell you how the cat was rough and tough. He would shut his stuff. Had the whole town scared to death. When he walked by, they all held their breath. He's a fighting man, sure enough. And then Bill got himself a wife. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. So who requested that? David Lee Roth, right?
That is.
Who requested that particular item?
Well, that's coming to us from Steve. The song is Big Bad Bill, and it's a Van Halen song.
Yeah. It's a very unusual choice.
Diver Down.
From Diver Down. Yeah, not one of my favorite Van Halen records. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And what's going on? We're here till 5. We've been talking about highly rated movies that people actually hated. Or what do you think? Everybody loves it. You don't. Overrated. We got a bunch of texts that are coming in. Phone lines are open if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 773 area code says, when Harry met Sally, OMG. My brother's wife on Christmas bought that piece of nonsense and demanded that we watch it. I hated it then, and I hate it now. When Harry met Sally. Not a big fan of that movie either. 847 area code, Dances with Wolves, just didn't care. Dances with Wolves didn't do it for me. I don't like Dances with Wolves either. I'm kind of agreeing with like all the texts that are coming in right now. Did not like Dances with Wolves. And what's even more ridiculous about that is that Dances with Wolves won Best Picture over Goodfellas that year. And Kevin Costner won Best Director over Martin Scorsese that year. So that just adds fuel to the fire of why you shouldn't like Dances with Wolves. I mean, eventually Scorsese would go on to win Best Director, But come on, Kevin Costner over Martin Scorsese? And against popular opinion, the same 847 area code says, The Lord of the Rings. Randall nailed it in Clerks 2. Trees walking, just drop the stupid ring in the fire and go home. Could not disagree more with that statement. I love the Lord of the Rings movies. Love them. Sean in Indy says, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ugh, such a smug jerk. Well, if you're a regular listener of the show, you know how much I hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off. One of the most despicable characters in the history of cinema. 773 area code says, don't like Pretty Woman and can't watch Julia Roberts ever since. There are a few movies I've liked Julia Roberts in. A few. I liked her in Erin Brockovich a lot. I thought she was really good in that. Hate Pretty Woman, though. Can't stand that movie. 312 area code says, two movies that people love but I hate are The Dark Knight and Borat. I'm with you 100% on both of those.
I like Borat.
I can't
stand I like both of
those. Borat. Can't stand it.
Are you not a Sacha Baron Cohen person?
No.
All right. There it is.
Yeah, no, I just don't. I thought he was great in Hugo. I like him when he's not being, you know, Borat or what the hell is the other one?
Ali G.
Or Ali G or the other one.
Bruno.
I can't do it. And I hated Borat. God, I hated that movie. Oh, my God. And then to go along with it, that was a really fun time to be hanging out in bars and hearing every white guy at the bar doing a Borat imitation.
My wife.
Oh, my God. From Mr. P, I thought the first Spider-Man movie was kind of boring.
Boo. Wrong take.
I like the first Spider-Man. The second one's better.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, which was my favorite comic book movie ever until Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I saw Logan, I was like, oh.
No, if you ask me, those two Spider-Man movies pretty much are the rocks that this entire whole culture of superhero movies are built on.
Yeah, I remember when Spider-Man came out. I mean, that was massive when it came out. In 2002, when the first Spider-Man came out, massive.
It's rad. It's so good. I had my
the whole resurgence of comic book movies released every week. Iron Man did that.
But even I still think that the way that they approached Iron Man, the way that Favreau approached that movie. You can see shades of what Sam Raimi was doing.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, really making it a character adaptation and really trying to nail down who Tony Stark is. Obviously, it's the beginning of the MCU and everything.
Right.
But, it's... You go back and see Spider-Man 1 and 2 and you're just like, oh, so this is, like, the text that
I remember. I remember the first time I saw Spider-Man 2, I lost my mind.
So good. Alfred Molina, batting.
Unbelievable.
He's hitting them out of the park left and right.
No, that I thought Spider-Man 2 was really... I remember seeing it, and when it ended, I remember walking to the... We saw it at the Piper's Alley, which is was not my favorite theater in the world, but I saw it at Piper's Alley, and I remember I went with my friend Mike, and we were walking back to his car, and I said, give me your cell phone. I didn't have a cell phone at that time. I said, give me your phone. And I called Scott Oaken, my friend. And I was like, I just saw maybe the greatest comic book movie of all time, because he's a big comic book guy, my friend Scott. And I immediately called him. And I was like, you got to see this movie when it comes out. So here's Michelle on WGN. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Nick. Good morning.
Morning.
Two films immediately came to mind. The first one, American Gigolo. there's just not a sympathetic character in the whole damn thing. It's absolutely distasteful beyond belief. And it just sucks.
Good old Paul Schrader right there.
Oh, man. It's just the dregs. Just dreck. And the second one I just saw recently was... another oldie, but Terms of Endearment.
Oh, I love that movie.
Do you really? Other than Jack Nicholson, what do you love?
Everything. I love that movie. I do. And that movie just kills me every time I watch it.
Wow.
I'm sobbing every single time I watch it.
Wow, I think first of all, I hate the character's name, Flap.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Just the worst.
Okay.
And I got to chime in on Bo Rap. Oh my God, there's just not enough words. Can you imagine if Freddie had seen this piece of crap? I mean, I could just hear him say, "Oh, darling, you butchered me."
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Michelle, thanks.
Really sad. See you later.
Take care. There you go.
I wasn't sure if she was saying Borat or Bo Rap, but obviously Bo Rap.
Bo Rat. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun time to listen to white guys in bars doing that imitation. I remember one night I was at the Green Mill, and the movie had been out for about 3 weeks. And I was at the mill, and there were like four guys who just would not stop. They would not stop doing Borat imitations. And I'm like, just shut up. God. So. How about this one? The Shining. This person says, I can appreciate Stanley Kubrick's visuals, but his movies tend to drag. The Shining was too long for what it was. It's a one-of-a-kind story that doesn't translate well into film. It also tends to be one of the movies that toxic guys base their entire identities around. So it's always left a bad taste in my mouth, despite my love of horror movies. I love The Shining. I can understand it. You know, the only people who might dislike Kubrick's version of The Shining are the people who wanted to see, you know, a faithful adaptation, which it's not at all. And if anybody agrees with that, it's Stanley. It's Stephen King, who has actively, vocally distanced himself from the movie, and everybody knows that he's not a fan. But I guess I can understand him. It is a pretty slow moving film. It is over 2 hours. But I like it. I like it a lot. Boyhood. I get that the production side of the movie was something that had never been done before, but the plot was an absolutely mundane. It was basically a movie with no plot and no point. I'm not a fan of the slice of life genre, but I feel like the only hype I hear about this movie is how it was made and not the actual plot or acting. Boyhood's a beautiful movie, man. It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah, but if as they freely admit, if you're not into the whole slice of life thing, it's just you're just going to be bored the whole time.
Well, I mean, that's Linklater makes those kind of movies.
Exactly. No, you know? I know.
Dazed is nothing. I mean, Dazed and Everybody Wants Some. They're both just complete nothing happens. Slice of life day.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, Everybody Wants Some is a pretty great baseball movie. I did not expect it to be a great baseball movie.
Yeah, no, it's great.
I love that movie. I think it's great. I think it's it has the same spirit as Dazed, and I think it's a terrific movie. And nobody went to see that.
No, it was really disappointing.
It was very disappointing. Yeah, but that's the kind of stuff Linklater does. I mean, the Before trilogy, nothing happens, and it's just two people talking.
No. Well, it's one of those things where I think people tend to confuse a movie's plot versus what a movie is about.
Yeah.
And I love the Before trilogy. Slacker, I watch on the regular. I think Slacker is incredible
I have not seen it since it came out.
Oh, man.
And I liked it, but I didn't. I remember not loving it. But I've not seen it since it came out.
Yeah. The Madonna pap smear thing is just so ridiculous.
But yeah. But no, but that's what Linklater does. I mean,
yeah.
He's slice of life kind of plotless movies. That's his strength. I think I'm going to sneeze here in a second. We'll see. Well, let's just try and get through the weather without sneezing all over the village here. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, followed by Steve Cochran at 6. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. So, BuzzFeed put a bunch of movies together and that are mostly highly rated, that are mostly really liked, that are not liked by many people. And here is here's the next one that they're talking about here in the article where people don't like very highly rated movies. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. It says, I love Frances McDormand, but the ending of this movie was BS. Why? I think Three Billboards is great.
I don't think I liked it as much as a lot of people, but I did appreciate it.
I think it's just great. I thought every performance in it was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I like the way McDonough. I like his style. I like well, in Bruges, please.
In oh,
I mean, please. All right, we've got some texts that are coming in about movies that people seem to love, but you didn't. 715 area code Groundhog Day. You feel that way about Groundhog Day, right?
Yeah, I've never really understood the hype. Probably because I'm from that area that everybody, you know, anytime you go to Woodstock, people just talk about, hey, Groundhog Day was filmed here. All right, cool. That's fine. I don't care.
They say Groundhog Day, tried to watch it three times. Boring, unfunny, funny, and horribly acted. I don't understand its popularity. Wow. I love Groundhog Day. I think it's a classic. I think it's great.
There are funnier Bill Murray movies. That's all I'll say. There are much funnier ones.
Well, I mean, you know, I think Groundhog Day is very funny, but I also don't think it's, you know, I actually think it's not necessarily meant to be, you know, like laugh out loud funny.
No, I suppose not.
You know?
But Tobolowsky.
Phenomenal.
Amazing.
Bing!
What a heat check.
Oh, he's the best. And he was really funny. And it's directed by Harold Ramis, for God's sake. So it gets a pass immediately because it's Harold Ramis. I love him. But Harold Ramis told this story of when they were making the movie. Because Tobo's a ham. He's a total ham, especially in Groundhog Day. Especially, it's a great performance, but it's honey glazed, man. It is honey glazed. So Harold Ramis told the story, you know, because, you know, like, you know, AMC, I don't know if it was AMC or A&E, one of those, did like a 2-hour, you know, behind the scenes making documentary of Groundhog Day and got pretty much everybody back,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do the talking head stuff. And he talks, Ramis talks about how much of a ham Tobo is. So the scene where Bill Murray punches him, you know, the scene where he punches Tobo?
Yeah, yeah.
Tobolowsky purposely turned all the way around and made sure that his face was in the... It made sure that his face was facing the camera, and he swung his head around and then made a goofy face and fell out of frame. But he wasn't supposed to do that. Like, he was just supposed to take the... He was supposed to take the shot and fall down. But Ramis is like, now, did a full-on 180. There's his face right in the camera, making him mugging his way down. So if you watch it, you just watch him spin all the way around.
And then he pulls out a cigar that explodes.
It's just, he's the best. 920 area code says, Blair Witch sucked. I wanted my money back. That's a very divisive movie. I love it. I think Blair Witch is scary. I think it's great.
I don't know. I just grew up always knowing that this is like the scariest thing. This is like as scary gets.
I think it's a really scary movie. But when the movie came out, man, first of all, one of the first, if not the first movie to really use the internet. Nobody was doing it. It was in its kind of infancy when it came out. It was around, but that was the first movie because a lot of people thought the legend was real. They thought the footage was real.
Mm-hmm.
They thought the three people disappeared. They were real. And so brilliantly marketed, caused a buzz, I remember when I saw it, theater was sold out, like completely sold out, and then the backlash started. I still think Blair Witch is scary, and I think it's got one of the most terrifying final shots in movie history. The final shot of that movie is unbelievable.
Yeah. And you can still go to that website. It's still up.
But I remember taking a lot of flack when it came out. A lot of people. I know a
people
lot.
People just saying it wasn't scary.
They thought it was stupid. They thought it was boring. They didn't care. You know, and of course, they people complained about the camera, the shaky cam. And that didn't bother me. The shaky cam stuff didn't bother me. You know what movie really did, though?
Cloverfield.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I told you this before is my ex and I sat, we had to sit in like the second row.
That's just, ooh.
Because the place was packed, we got there late, and we had to sit in the second row. River East, giant screen, and I'm sitting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
and
not
I,
a screen you want
I was
be.
Like, I had to look down. I had to look away from the screen a bunch of times. I was really getting nauseous. I was just like looking down. I was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't like, because I like Cloverfield. Cloverfield's a good movie, but 224 area code says Gravity. I love that movie. I love that movie. And I think Sandra Bullock is amazing in it.
It's the only Alfonso Cuarón movie I don't like.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. 630 area code says almost every best picture since 1980. Jeez. You don't like any best picture since 1980? So you were happy Ordinary People beat Raging Bull? Was this?
I really just the last, like, you know, nearly 40 years of cinema, just there's, nothing, nothing no, to you.
There's a lot of good stuff that's
amazing stuff,
great stuff. But 1980, Ordinary People beats Raging Bull. Robert Redford wins Best Director over Scorsese, and then 10 years later, Dances with Wolves beats Goodfellas, and another actor, first-time director, Kevin Costner, wins over Martin Scorsese. Scorsese got it for The Departed. That's not the movie that he should have gotten an Academy Award for. I like The Departed. I think The Departed's terrific. But
it's the probably one of the more fun movies he's ever made, because it's just so bonkers.
Well, you know, all the performances are great in it. Everybody's great, especially Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg is unbelievable in that movie.
So, who are you? I'm the guy who does my job. You must be the other guy.
Yeah. No, I love Alec Baldwin. Fantastic. All the supporting, you know, performances. Leo's great. Damon's great in it. I really enjoy that. And Nicholson, completely insane.
And plus, it introduced me to Vera Farmiga.
Oh.
Who, holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, how about this? Someone didn't like Bridesmaids. How can you not like Bridesmaids? I laughed at absolutely no jokes during this movie. All the characters are horrible people, so you can't sympathize with anyone, and most of the scenes are just straight-up grotesque. I thought Bridesmaids was hilarious. I thought Bridesmaids is a movie that makes me laugh every single time I watch it, and I think everybody in it is great. And everybody knows, you know, it was kind of the big breakout performance for Melissa McCarthy. I understand that. But everybody is funny in that movie. Everybody. And they said that the scenes were just straight up grotesque. Listen, man. Maya Rudolph taking a crap in the middle of the street is hilarious.
She just slowly just kind of...
She falls down. She's got the wedding dress on. Okay, so this is happening.
You're doing it. You're crapping in the street. You're crapping in the street. Would you like some Jordan Almonds?
And I will say this. It's, you know, it was such a boys' club. Those kind of movies were such a boys' club. It was awesome to see a bunch of really funny women doing the dirty R-rated Apatow thing. You know, that had become like the Seth Rogen kind of thing, just to see these really brilliantly funny women be really vulgar and really funny. I adore Bridesmaids. I think it's great. Okay, let's take a quick break, and the news is coming up after this. Well, I feel a sausage, a little blouse, do them soft grills in our little farmhouse. And the lights go out, it's just a stuff, we're so scared of, gonna ride down, baby. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Two for Tuesday.
Yeah, man. Two for Tuesday.
Continues. Who requested the boss?
It's coming to us from John.
John wanted to hear a little Springsteen, so there you go. All right. Welcome back, everybody. There was an article that was put together by people at BuzzFeed, and they're talking about highly rated movies that people really hate. And we've been talking about those titles. Like, for instance, The Shape of Water. They say the only good thing about it is the presentation of the deaf community. Other than that, the girl is weird and the whole plot is drawn out and boring. Then she has sex with a fish guy. And don't even get me started on the weird out of place dance number. It took me 2 days to watch it.
That must be sad for them.
Yeah.
To be missing out on a really great story.
Yeah. You know what? I like the movie. I didn't love it.
I adored it.
Yeah. I don't know. It was Splash.
Come on.
It's Splash.
Don't.
All the way down to the ending, man.
I don't remember anybody having sex with a fish man in Splash.
Well, they didn't show it.
It was implied.
And she did on the land have legs, so, but, yeah, I just thought, I mean, I thought Michael Shannon was great, in it, and I actually think all the performances were good in it, but,
yeah.
I can't, there are times when Del Toro, I'm like, pull it back, man, I understand you like weird creatures, that's fantastic.
He just, from interviews I saw with him, he just always wanted a love story for the creature from the Black Lagoon. And
yeah.
This was that. Is it his best? No. It's not Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
But is it?
Pan's Labyrinth, not even my favorite. My favorite is The Devil's Backbone.
That's a great
movie. That's my favorite Del Toro movie. That's a really scary movie.
It's an excellent ghost story. And yeah. I'm not someone who's normally, I'm not a ghost story person. I prefer other genres, but that is the best of that type.
All right, here's one. It Follows. I love It Follows. Everyone raved about this as a horror movie, and I was bored. The tension they tried to create was slow, and it just came off as comical. Totally disagree. I love that movie. It Follows. And I like the lake village. Or
oh, under Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was great, too, man.
No, it's very good.
630 area code says, Team America World Police. Some guy raved about that movie. Some young guy raved about that movie. I've been waiting 15 years to complain about it. You. Yeah, that's right. I'm raving about it now, too.
America.
That movie's hilarious. Team America World Police is hilarious, and I'm still raving about it. I don't take back anything I've said about it. Also, one of the greatest vomit scenes in the history of movies.
It's Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
It's
know
hilarious.
The territory.
That's
know
all
the
is.
Territory.
It's a guy who's made the South Park. If that's not your cup of tea, then you don't want to see it. 770 area code says Shakespeare in Love.
Agreed.
I wanted to walk out, but I was with the in-laws. It was dreadful. I didn't hate Shakespeare in Love.
I think it's just remarkably average.
Yeah, it's not great. And, Saving Private Ryan came out that year, which a lot of people think deserved to win the award.
Over Shakespeare in Love, probably.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not crazy about Saving Private Ryan either. 217 area code. Well, what the hell's going on here? Citizen Kane? What?
I bet you hate the Bible, too.
Wow.
Just kidding.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, granted, I'm more of a Touch of Evil guy.
Sure.
I prefer Touch of Evil over Citizen Kane, although they're both great. But Citizen Kane, legendary. But I don't know, man. Touch of Evil just, and I love Orson Welles in it so much. I think I love everything about that movie. And I love the scene in Get Shorty where Travolta's watching Touch of Evil.
Yeah.
In the movie theater.
Yeah.
Oh, Orson, you're going down.
I know he's not like really, he's in it, but he's not like the main focus, like he's not the star, but The Third Man.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Love it.
It's a great movie. Yep. 224 area code, White Chicks. Well, who likes White Chicks? Does anybody like that movie?
I mean, probably. There's a theory that every movie is somebody's favorite movie. So there's got to be somebody out there.
Somebody in the world thinks White Chicks is the best movie?
Yep.
We're talking about the Wayans Brothers movie.
Yes.
No. There can't be a person that exists in the world that thinks White Chicks is like one of the greatest movies.
I mean, until, you know, last week, I didn't know that there was a subgenre of ninja movies that you really enjoyed. What was it? Ninja 3.
Ninja 3 to Domination.
Yeah.
Lucinda Dickey.
I didn't think that movie existed until last week, and then I found out, hey, what do you know? And Nick loves them.
They're fantastic. The 80s ninja movies are fantastic. All right, how about Us? It's the most annoying movie I've ever seen. Every second after the doppelganger showed up at their doorstep, I wanted to throw something at my TV, given the character's endless list of absolutely mind-numbing dumb choices. Well, I very much disagree with that. Next here is Her. Okay. I love this movie, but I can absolutely see why somebody would hate it. Everyone thought a movie with mustaches and Scarlett Johansson and ukuleles and high-waisted pants was deeply profound and the highest form of art. No, my God, that movie is pure hot garbage and deserved absolutely none of the accolades. I love it. I totally love it. And, yeah. The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, I didn't like that movie.
I thought it was fine. I happen to really like Hugh Jackman a lot. I think Hugh Jackman is pretty much one of the most talented people on the planet. I mean, he's one of those guys. I think Hugh Jackman can do anything.
Well, he's a huge jacked man.
Yeah, he is. But he's also a great singer. He's a great dancer. He can do drama. He can do comedy. He can do action. I happen to be a really, really big Hugh Jackman fan. But The Greatest Showman, they say, honestly, I will never understand a musical that romanticizes a man who exploits disabled people. The music is annoying and cheesy. It was obviously made as a cash grab. The Babadook. Man, do not be dissing on The Babadook. I honestly do not understand the hype. It has zero scare factor. The plot is predictable, and the acting is like most horror movie acting. That's so wrong on every single level. It's a terrifying movie, and the acting is spectacular. The two leads are unbelievable. The kid's unbelievable. She's unbelievable. And it's scary as hell. The Babadook is a really scary movie.
Yeah. I can't wait to see, what was it, The Nightingale?
Well, that's her next. It's supposed to be brutal.
Yeah.
Like Eric said that it was, it's a really, really hard movie to watch. Mm-hmm. Like the audiences are going to be like, I think I'm going to have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I know it opens in select cities Friday. I do not know if Chicago is one of those select cities. Oh, no. Roma? Somebody's going to be dissing on Roma? Don't get me wrong, it was beautifully shot, but the gimmick of using non-actors didn't really pay off, in my opinion, and it was entirely too long. Definitely better than most movies I've seen recently. But if you're a fan of independent movies, especially ones from the 60s and 70s, where it seems to take much of its style from, it's not all that impressive. Yeah, no, Roma was the best movie of last year.
Haunting.
The best movie is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yeah. Super.
And the lead performance was astounding. Absolutely astounding. It's Carone, man. He rules. So, all right, let's break here for some weather.
Someone to talk to, and a little of that human touch. just a little of that human touch.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Here until 5, 2 for Tuesday continues. 312-981-7200. All right. We've been talking here about highly rated movies that people actually hate. BuzzFeed put this together, and now we're talking to you guys about what you guys think about some of these movies that, people love, but you probably don't. Next year, 50 Shades of Grey. Does anybody like those movies?
I mean, people saw them.
Yeah. Yeah. I happen to really, really like Dakota Johnson a lot.
Yeah.
I really, really like her.
She's great. She's amazing.
Movies are terrible, though. They're terrible. The entire movie franchise, they say the books were atrocious, but they paled in comparison to those stupid movies. She was in a sitcom with Nat Faxon, where they played brother and sister.
Yeah.
It was on Fox. It was a really funny show, and I loved her on it. And Lucy Punch was in it, too.
Lucy Punch.
And Stacy, something like that. It was two names. It was a brother and sister's names.
I want to say it was Ben.
Ben and something. But anyway, it was that's when I first saw
Ben and Kate.
That's when I first saw Dakota Johnson. That was when I first like kind of fell in love with her. Was I thought she was really, really funny on that show.
I adored Lucy Punch.
She's awesome.
She is so unbelievably funny.
Yep. Star is Born.
Agreed.
The last one. I just found it to be a bit on the boring side, though I did enjoy the last 30 minutes of it. Also, I didn't like the duet song. I somehow managed to not watch it or hear Shallow up until a few days ago, and it was so underwhelming. I did like some of Jackson's solo songs, though. Also, Lady Gaga wasn't that great in it. She wasn't bad by any means, but definitely not what I think as a great performance. I liked The Star is Born. I don't know if I liked it as much as a lot of other people did, but I certainly liked it, and I thought Bradley Cooper directed it very well, and I thought they were both really good in it. And I'm not a Lady Gaga fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I really liked her in it. Okay, Hereditary. This is one that we hear a lot. It's a very divisive movie. It says, I like being scared, and usually I'm easily creeped out, so I was looking forward to seeing this as seeing one of the scariest movies in a long time. My boyfriend and I waited till late, turned out the lights, started it, and nothing. Was it a little creepy? Yeah, maybe, but scary? I've definitely seen worse. Highly, highly disappointing. Hereditary is a really scary movie.
It scares me still.
Totally freaks me out.
But that was one of the only movies we carried at the theater I worked at that was kind of indie, you know what I mean? We only carried really big releases,
yeah.
Four screens, you know? And I really tried to push to get people to go see it. And it was pretty much a 50-50 split.
Oh, yeah.
They either came out and said, thank you, that was awesome, what a crazy movie, or they were just like, I kind of wish you didn't tell me to go see that movie. I hated it.
Die Hard.
Who doesn't like Die Hard? Come on.
It says, a lot of people will disagree with me on this, but the villains were so cliche. Come on, man. Do
Stop.
Not be dissing on Alan Rickman.
Stop that.
Do not be dissing on Alan Rickman.
That should be a crime.
Hans Gruber is one of the greatest villains in movie history. I found myself cringing through most of it. Now I love Bruce Willis, but I really think he's had better roles. That's the definitive role of his career.
He's never had a better role.
He's John McClane.
Yeah.
All right, we got some texts that have come in. If you want to jump in, talk or text 312-981-7200. I don't like Die Hard. Come on, man.
Grow up.
815 area code. The Fast and the Furious franchise is pretty much all terrible. I don't agree with that.
I think there's some real fun stuff going on in there.
I agree.
If you're willing to.
And Hobbs and Nobbs comes out this week. I'm not going to be able to see it because I'll be at the I'll be at the convention all weekend, so I'm going to miss Hobbs and Knobs.
I might have to slip away from the convention to just catch it real quick.
Well, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, so...
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Oof.
Those movies are long, man. Those Fast and Furious movies. The last one was like 2.5 hours long.
Wow. It's kind of ironic, don't you think? Fast and Furious?
Yeah. The last one was like the last one was like 2 hours and 35
well,
minutes.
And you know what? I really didn't like The Fate of the Furious. I thought that was one of the weaker ones.
It's one of the weaker ones. There's still there's some pretty great stuff in it. But
yeah, the prison fight's sweet, but...
I like the one where they're dragging the damn safe down the street. I don't even know which one it is, where they're dragging the big safe.
Is that Fast Five?
I don't know. I don't know any of them. I just know...
Yeah, it's Fast Five.
I just know that they're ridiculous. 847 area code 2001, what pretentious drivel? No.
No. you must not like movies.
One of the landmark movies of all time, one of the greatest science fiction achievements ever. 815 area code says critics love The Last Jedi, but I thought it was awful on so many levels. I like The Last Jedi.
Probably the second best Star Wars movie.
I like all the new ones, man. Not a big fan of the original trilogy. The prequels are unspeakable. I didn't hate Revenge of the Sith. I didn't hate the last one.
That one like passes low bar.
Yeah, but I mean the first 20 minutes is unwatchable. But then it kind of gets down to the nitty gritty, and the guy they hired to play Grand Moff Tarkin looks exactly like Peter Cushing. I don't know where they found him.
Yeah.
But my favorite of all of the Star Wars movies, all of them, is Rogue One. That's my favorite Star Wars movie of all time.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand that, but I respect it. I respect the dedication.
I love that movie, and I think it's because everybody dies. And I'm not ruining anything. If you saw the first Star Wars, you know what happened before the first Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Everybody on that mission dies. And I'll tell you, you know, that scene at the end when Darth Vader's just ripping through guys in that hallway.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Sometimes I just watch that scene. I just don't need to watch the rest of the movie. I'm there for just that bit.
But it's fantastic. Let's see. Another movie that I hate that people love is the first Paranormal Activity, a movie where they just moved around for 2 hours. Yeah, really creative. I don't like any of the Paranormal Activity movies.
I thought the first one was interesting. It was an interesting approach.
Yeah, it just didn't... I don't like any of them. I don't think any of them are scary.
They got to, like, what, five or six?
Yeah, I feel like... I don't even know how many there are. I know there's at least five of them.
It's criminal.
Because they don't cost any money, and they made a lot.
No, no.
You know, you make your money back on one weekend when you release a movie like that. Next here mentioned of are movies that are highly rated that people actually hate. Logan, are you nuts? What? Here's what they say. I hated Logan. There weren't any characters in that movie left that I wanted to root for. It was just me wishing I had never wasted my money on the ticket in the first place. Oh, come on. I love that movie.
Yeah.
My favorite comic book movie. The Favorite. It's another movie I loved.
The Favorite is hilarious.
It was fantastic. And the three women in the movie were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. The Favorite was terrible. It had so much potential. I love the idea and the actors, but it went so far off the rails. If the film had followed the clips that were shown, it would have been great. Instead, it's a mess that left us all saying WTF.
That was for The Favorite?
Yeah. You know who's fantastic in The Favorite? Everybody. But Nicholas Hoult is unbelievable.
He's so funny.
He's hilarious in it.
So foppish.
Well, the whole movie's hilarious. That's the thing. You know, here's the thing about The Favorite for me. It's like this wonderful combination of like Python, Hammer Horror, and All About Eve.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's like a combination of all of those things. And I loved it. Very distinctive style, and it had some really scary stuff in it too. And it was also laugh out loud funny. And I love that movie. I love that movie. Of course, I like The Lobster, and I like the and I like this. What's the sacred? The death of a sacred.
The killing of a sacred deer.
I love that movie too. I like his movies, man.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
He's a total weirdo. Total weirdo. Yep. All right, news is up after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Who requested the ELO?
It's coming to us from Mike in Louisville.
Mike in Louisville. And you saw them over the weekend.
I did, and Jeff Lynn, just as good as ever.
Yep. I haven't seen him since the 70s. But
well, he looks more or less the same.
Mm-hmm. No, I watched the... they had... Jeff Lynne's ELO performs. This is when he did the tour for like exclusively Out of the Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched that. It was on one of them channels on the cables.
Yeah, like Access.
I think it was Access. Yeah. So, but yeah, it must have been a fun show.
Yeah, I was, as you might imagine, a lot of people who were significantly older than me.
Oh, yeah.
But a great group.
Yeah.
Great crowd.
Yep. All right. Hey, welcome back. We are talking, if you want to jump in, BuzzFeed put together a group of movies that were highly rated, but people actually hate. So if you think a movie that most people really love or the critics were fawning over, but you just don't get it or you don't like it, or you think it's overrated, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Next one here listed is Slumdog Millionaire, which I have to agree with.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan.
Before I watched the film, I read the book that it was based on, and I loved it. It's one of my favorite books, and I was so disappointed when I saw how different the film was from it. Don't get me wrong. I can understand how the film shines on its own, but I honestly wish the film was a straight-up adaptation of the book. There's a personal preference, though. I just can't watch it without comparing it to the book. I never read the book, but I wasn't crazy about the movie. It won Best Picture that year.
Yeah. And Danny Boyle's having a weird streak.
Well, what was his last one? He's got
yesterday.
One out now, right?
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah. Slumdog Millionaire, I just remember it winning Best Picture and me going, wait a minute, because I think I can't remember what it was up against. So it would have won the award in 2009 for the releases of 2008. But I just remember thinking there are at least two other Best Picture nominees that are up against Slumdog Millionaire that are a lot better than Slumdog Millionaire. But I can't remember what they were. Can you,
I'm pulling up here. You've got Benjamin Button.
No.
Frost Nixon.
No.
Milk.
Mm.
And The Reader.
Well, maybe it wasn't that great a year then.
Yeah, it was not.
Milk is the best one out of the ones that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. How about this one? Call Me By Your Name. I liked Call Me By Your Name, but I didn't love it.
I watched it a couple of times, because the first time I watched it, I was just kind of overwhelmed. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, I actually like this a lot more.
I thought the best part of that movie is the cinematography and the setting. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And, I liked it. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was, people were going nuts over that movie when it came out.
Yeah.
It says, I found Call Me By Your Name quite overrated. The graphics were pleasant to look at, but I found the plot to be lacking. I was incredibly bored and felt like they didn't do the book justice. Colette. The movie Colette, starring Keira Knightley and Dominic West, was one of the worst films I've ever seen. People in the cinema were actually laughing out loud at some of the dialogue and acting, and the film was not a comedy. It took itself so seriously, but in reality it was dull. None of the characters were likable. I loved basically every actor in it and was expecting so much, but apart from the beautiful cinematography and set design, this film has absolutely nothing going for it. Did you see Colette?
No, I never caught. That was Keira Knightley.
Mm-hmm. Keira Knightley, Dominic West, and it's not very good. It was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, Keira Knightley's hit or miss for me.
Sometimes I really like her. I loved her in that End of the World movie with Steve Carell.
Oh yeah, Seeking a Friend for the
End
of the
man,
World.
I thought she was great in that.
That was a movie that I felt like not a lot of people saw, and it is, in a way, like incredibly depressing.
Yeah,
but it's also shockingly beautiful.
No, seriously, it's a great movie.
I really
I think she's phenomenal in it.
I really I liked what she was trying to do in A Dangerous Method. I thought that was a really
well Cronenberg
out there. Great movie. Great movie. Cronenberg just going all in.
Yeah. The Notebook. Here's what they say about it. The Notebook is totally overrated and full of problematic, boring, and repetitive storylines. I fully admit to liking The Notebook. And I know I've heard so much backlash about me liking this movie, but I like it. I don't care. I remember when it came out, I caught some hell for liking it, but I stand by my positive review of The Notebook. I don't care. I like it.
I wrote you every day.
Yeah, I like it. I think the two lead performances are fantastic. They clearly had chemistry because they were dating at the time. And then Ryan Gosling goes and decides that his leading lady now is going to be Emma Stone for 9 movies in a row, which is great because they've got incredible chemistry.
Yeah, I was going to say, big fan.
They were great. They're great in La La Land, great in Crazy Stupid Love, which is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gangster movie wasn't all that good.
Yeah, Gangster Squad.
Yeah, it wasn't all that
good. Yeah.
But they're great in both of those other movies.
Oh, totally, totally.
Clueless. Who doesn't like Clueless? How do you not like Clueless?
I used to not like Clueless.
What?
I didn't get it.
Clueless is awesome, man.
I changed my mind.
Here's what they say. I struggled so hard to finish this movie. It was horrible, not funny and boring. The only good thing was Paul Rudd, and even his character was forgettable and creepy. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. How can you be dissing on Clueless? What? Come on, man. Alicia Silverstone is so great. That was, I mean, seriously, that's an iconic performance. She's so great. I'll even forgive her for Batgirl because of that movie.
I mean, would you say that Clueless is the 90s teen movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitive. Without question.
Certainly better than American Pie.
Well, I love American Pie.
American Pie is its own thing.
I love that movie. I love American Pie. I absolutely love it. And I remember seeing it the first time, like being pretty much like kind of blown away by it. And I laughed my ass off during it. And I still think it's funny.
Jennifer Coolidge is my favorite part of that movie.
Stifler's mom.
Aged 18 years.
No, there's a lot of funny stuff in that movie, man. You know, and the sequels got worse as they went along.
Yeah, oh yeah, no doubt.
You know, by the time they got to band camp, I was like, okay.
You weren't a fan of The Naked Mile or Beta House?
No. Then when they started going straight to video, you knew you were in trouble. And I hated American. Was it American Wedding?
That no.
A reunion.
Reunion. American Reunion.
Oh,
was the last
sucked.
One with the main cast.
I was so disappointed. Let's see. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. You're going to not like what I'm going to say, but I can't stand Thelma and Louise. It drives me crazy because I can't stand when stupid people do stupid things, behave stupidly. And I had never even seen Brad Pitt before that. And I thought he was just this ugly little dude next to Gina Davis in the movie. I mean, I can't look at it.
Wow. Well, really? I mean, I really think Thelma and Louise is pretty great. I've mentioned this before. I don't like the fact that Gina Davis immediately sleeps with Brad Pitt after being sexually, attacked. And I don't like the ending. I don't think it should have ended on a happy note. It was supposed to cut to black. They go off the cliff. That was supposed to cut to black.
Yeah. Well, I did hear you talk about liking it, and that's why I brought it up, because that's the one movie that drives I cannot stand. And it to me, they're just too stupid, and they're doing stupid things.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Paula,
it's not
thanks.
McDonald's to me.
Thanks, Paula.
Good night.
Take care. When I first saw Thelma and Louise, during Brad Pitt's shirtless scene, there were audible gasps from women in the audience. Audible gasps when Brad Pitt, you know, is doing the whole, like, you know, with the blow dryer, where he's like, I'm you know, talking about Robin. And I remember people were just like, huh? Just like falling out of their chairs. So, beautiful man. All right, let's take a break here for some weather, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up the show and wrap up the conversation here about highly rated movies that some people actually hate. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5. And it is a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday wrapping up. Two for Tuesday wrapped up with the LO. We'll do it again Two for Tuesday next week. And coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. There you go. All right. We've been talking about movies that are usually really well-liked, but some people don't like them. So we've got a few more of those. We got some texts coming in. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick. I was wondering if you've ever seen the movie Falling in Love with Robert De Niro, Meryl Streep?
Yes.
I like that movie. It's just a really good story. You know, it's in Christmas time. They meet. They decide they can't carry out the affair, and Robert De Niro looks everywhere for her.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember when it came out. It was not a box office success, but both of the performances were good. So
yeah, just was one of my favorite movies to watch.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. All right, let's see. 847 area code says Mulholland Drive, inert and inept. No.
Just like you.
No. 724 area kid says Moneyball combined the excitement of baseball with the thrill of accounting and made it nice and long.
That's pretty funny.
That's funny. I like the movie though.
No, yeah.
815 area code No Country for Old Men. Yeah, I'm with this. I don't like No Country for Old Men.
I adore that movie.
No.
How do you are you a Cormac McCarthy person?
Not really, but
because, like, even it took me a while, because I read the book. I saw the movie, and I read the book, No Country for Old Men. It took me a while to adjust to what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I just, I didn't like it at all. I thought the only good thing in the movie was Josh Brolin. It was the only good
You
thing
didn't even like Javier Bardem?
No.
Call it.
He acted with his hair in that movie.
Stop.
No, I don't like it. I can't stand it. I think the ending is ridiculous. And it also had the audacity to win Best Picture over There Will Be Blood, which is absurd.
Okay.
Absurd. That's
a tough year. That's a tough year.
That's not tough. It's There Will Be Blood. That's what the best movie of that year was.
Did someone drink your milkshake?
I'm telling you, man. The Graduate, 847 area code, The Graduate. How many times do we need to hear Mrs. Robinson? A lot.
Come on.
Graduate is awesome. All right. Next here, Bird Box. Well, I didn't, I mean, I thought the movie was okay. I didn't hate it, but I did think it was absolutely ridiculous that, that people started doing the whole Bird Box challenge thing. These people are lunkheads. Here's what they say about it. Honestly, the whole internet was raving about Bird Box when it was released, but it was just so mediocre. Cliched, boring, and slow. I wanted those 2 hours of my life back. What did everyone love about it so much? That, coupled with the Bird Box challenge, was enough to kill it for me.
The good old Bird Box challenge.
Yeah, people are just dumb.
Was that this year?
That was
or is that last
year?
Okay, last late year. Last year. Yeah, no, that was, wow, woof.
Yeah. The Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club is one of my least favorite movies of all time. I find the plot for The Breakfast Club not very compelling. I recognize my bias as someone who saw the movie long after it was made. Still, it's not shocking that people aren't the stereotypes placed upon them. The straw that broke the camel's back, though, was how many people gush about it. I think I was expecting some infallible masterpiece, which made it all the more flat. I'm actually a big fan of The Breakfast Club.
I think John Hughes in general is a little overrated.
Yeah.
But I think if you're going to talk about any one of those movies being his opus, his masterpiece, it's probably The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. I think it's easily his best movie. Here's Paxton on WGN. Hi, Paxton.
Hey, Nick. Good topic. A movie that doesn't hold up after college is Harold and Maude. I worship that movie, but once you're past 25 years old and it's got that Thelma and Louise ending, kind of too.
I haven't seen Harold and Maude in years. But I like it. I mean, I remember the last time I saw it, I enjoyed it. But I haven't seen it in a really long time.
Yeah, you see it again, and you're going to say, "What was I thinking?"
Ah, okay. All right, Paxton. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Yep. You also got to be a fan of Cat Stevens. Get a lot of Cat Stevens in that movie.
That's true.
I remember Harold and Maude laughing at every fake suicide attempt that Bud Cort does. When he sets himself on fire, I just...
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Hal Ashby here.
Yeah.
And I guess it's one of those things... He said, you know, it's one of those movies you don't like. Once you're past 25, then I hope I die tragically in December.
No, come on now.
I really think it's a great movie. I think it's spectacular.
It's just been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
Been many years. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see a couple more of these movies that are highly rated, but some people hate The Fast and the Furious, the very first. I love it.
It's Point Break with Vin Diesel. Yeah. What more could you want?
Literally the entire Fast and Furious franchise. This person says the first one started off with a believable premise, and then it all went into different stratospheres of action. It was mindless and ridiculous like a good action film should be, but this continued connective narrative through the sequels is beyond rubbish. I really don't understand how they've become as huge as they are. It's truly run its course. Not according to Hobbs and Nobbs.
Which could be the most ridiculous one yet, based on what I've seen. It
looks ridiculous.
Idris Elba is basically just Superman.
Yeah.
It's great.
I really, you know, the first Fast and Furious, I remember how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was just terrific. And then they just, yes, they've gotten more ridiculous as they've gone on. And I don't know.
Well, what else are you supposed to do?
Are people counting how many times they say family in the movie?
Have you noticed the way that Vin Diesel drinks a Corona?
Yes.
How he grabs it right by the neck?
Yeah.
Who drinks a beer like that?
Vin and his family. And then finally, Beauty and the Beast, the live-action version.
Awful.
I really didn't like the remake of Beauty and the Beast. I'm a major Disney fan, and I thought they cast an awful Belle. Granted, I am a fan of Emma Watson. She was just not a good choice for Belle. The Beast looked like crap, and the and the little extra storyline was crap. Some of it was enjoyable, but as a whole, I was incredibly disappointed. I never saw it.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know.
Just pretend like it doesn't exist, really.
Well, that's what a lot of people have, you know, were trying to do with The Lion King, too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the animated Beauty and the Beast. I'm just not. And I know that.
Oh, you don't like the original one?
Well,
I don't have the same attachment to it like a lot of people do. I think it's
beautiful. I think it's beautifully animated.
It is beautifully animated.
And the songs are great. And really, that's all I can ask for.
But it's, you know, I mean, I just don't, you know, I don't, when it came out, it just became such a huge, huge thing.
What was that, 91? 91.
Yeah, 91. It became the first animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture.
First and only.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I didn't, you know, I don't see it.
It's certainly a phenomenon.
Okay, so here's the deal. Tomorrow, Wednesday, on the show, we're going to do a Know Your Onion. So get your headlines all ready to go. We'll do another edition of Wildcard Wednesday. And our good friend Rich Coes, Sven Gulli, is going to be joining us to talk about his appearance this weekend at Flashback Horror Convention.